Anacalypsis, Godfrey Higgins, 1833, Volume 1, 867 pages, Volume 2, 525 pages, Volume 1, Book 1, Chapter 1, Age of the World? Flood? Planets and days of the weeks. The Moon, page 27. In the most early history of mankind, I find all nations endeavoring to indulge a contemptible vanity, by tracing their origin to the most remote periods, and, for the gratification of this vanity, inventing fables of every description. Of this weakness they have all, in reality, been guilty. But the inhabitants of the Oriental countries occupy rather a more prominent place than those of the Western world, and I believe it will not be denied that, in the investigation of subjects connected with the first race of men, they are entitled on every account to claim a precedence. All nations have a tradition of the destruction of the world by a flood, and of the preservation of man from its effects. It appears to me that the question of the existence of the human race previous to the flood will not much interfere with my inquiries, but will, if it be admitted, only oblige me to reason upon the idea that certain facts took place before it, and that the effects arising from them were not affected by it. Page 29. Of the sayings of the wise men, there was not one, probably, more wise than that of the celebrated Know Thyself, and probably there was not one to which so little regard has been paid. It is to the want of attention to this principle that I attribute most of the absurdities with which the wise and learned, perhaps in all ages, may be reproached. Man has forgotten or been ignorant that his faculties are limited. He has failed to mark the line of demarcation, beyond which his knowledge could not extend. Instead of applying his mind to objects cognizable by his senses, he has attempted subjects above the reach of the human mind, and has lost and bewildered himself in the mazes of metaphysics. He has not known or has not attended to what has been so clearly proved by Locke, that no idea can be received except through the medium of sense. He has endeavored to form ideas without attending to this principle, and, as might be expected, he had run into the greatest absurdities, the necessary consequence of such imprudence. Page 29. Are information of the historical transactions which it is supposed took place previous to the catastrophe, and its attendant flood, which destroyed the ancient world, is very small. Mons. Bailey has observed that the famous cycle of the Neros, and the cycle of 7 days, or the week, from their peculiar circumstances, must probably have been of antediluvian invention. No persons could have invented the Neros who had not arrived at much greater perfection in astronomy than we know was the state of the most ancient of the Assyrians, Egyptians, or Greeks. The earliest of these nations supposed the year to have consisted of 360 days only, when the inventor of the Neros must have known its length to within a few seconds of time? A fact observed by Mons. Bailey to be a decisive proof that science was formally brought to perfection, and therefore, consequently, must have been afterward lost. There are indeed among the Hindus proofs innumerable that a very profound knowledge of the sciences was brought by their ancestors from the upper countries of India, the Himalaya Mountains, Tibet or Kashmir. These were, I apprehend, the first descendants of the persons who lived after the deluge. But this science has long been forgotten by their degenerate successors, the present race of Brahmins. The ancient Hindus might be acquainted with the Neros, but I think it probable that Josephus was correct in saying it is of antediluvian discovery, that is, that it was discovered previous to the time allotted for the deluge, and it is a curious circumstance that we receive this tradition from the people among whom we find the apparently antediluvian part of the book, or the first tract of the book, called Genesis, about which I shall have much more to observe in the course of this work. Page 30. Throughout all the nations of the ancient world, the planets are to be found appropriated to the days of the week, the 7-day cycle, with each day named after a planet, and universally the same day allotted to the same planet in all nations of the world, constitute the first proof, and leave no room to doubt that one system must have prevailed over the whole. Here are the origin and the reason of all judicial astrology, as well as the foundation upon which much of the heathen mythology was built. The two were closely and intimately connected. It is the object of this work to trace the steps by which, from the earliest time and small beginnings, this system grew to a vast and towering height, covering the world with gigantic monuments and beautiful temples, enabling one part of mankind, by means of the fears and ignorance of the other part, to trample in the dust. Uncivilized man is by nature the most timid of animals, and in that state the most defenseless, the storm, the thunder, the lightning, or the eclipse, fills him with terror. He is alarmed and trembles at everything which he does not understand, and that is almost everything that he sees or hears. Page 31 of the different histories of the creation, that contained in the book, or collection of books, called Genesis, has been in the western part of the world the most celebrated, and the nonsense which has been written respecting it, may fairly vie with the nonsense, a little time ago alluded to, of the ancient learned men of Greece and Rome. This book professes to commence with the history of the creation, and in our vulgar translation it says, "In the beginning God created the heavens and the earth." But I conceive for the word heavens the word planets ought to be substituted. The original for the word heavens is of great consequence. Parkhurst admits that it has the meaning of placers or disposers. In fact, it means the planets as distinguished from the fixed stars, and is the foundation, as I have said, and as we shall find, upon which all judicial astrology, and perhaps much of the heathen mythology, was built. Page 32. The following are the names of the gods allotted to each day: Sunday to the Sun, Monday to the Moon, Tuesday to Mars, Wednesday to Mercury, Thursday to Jupiter, Friday to Venus, and Saturday to Saturn, and it is worthy of observation, that neither Bacchus nor Hercules is among them, on which I shall have an observation to make in the future part of this work. In almost every page we shall have to make some reference to judicial astrology, which took its rise from the planetary bodies. Page 32. This doctrine respecting the moon will be thought paradoxical and absurd, and I shall be asked what I make of the goddess Isis. I reply, that it is the inconsistencies, contradictions, and manifest ignorance of the ancients respecting this goddess, which induce me to think that moon never was an object of worship in early times, and that it never became an object of adoration till comparatively modern times, when the knowledge of the ancient mysteries was lost, and not only the knowledge of the mysteries, but the knowledge of religion itself, or at least of its origin and meaning, were lost. The least attention to the treatises of Plato, Phaedonius, Cicero, Porphyry, and, in short, or every one of the ancient writers on the subject of the religion, must convince any unprejudiced person that they either were all completely in the dark, or pretended to be. After the canal got to worship onions, crocodiles, and sea, no doubt the moon came in for a share of their adoration, but all the accounts of it are full of inconsistency and contradiction. For this reason I think it was of late invention, and that Isis was not originally the moon, but the mother of the gods. Many other reasons for this opinion will be given in the course of this work, when I come to treat of Isis and the moon. Book 1, Chapter 2. First God of the Ancients ? The Sun ? Double Nature of the Deity ? Metempsychosis and the Renewal of Worlds ? Mortal Evil ? Eternity of Matter ? Buddha ? Genesis. I shall now proceed to show, in a way which I think I may safely say cannot be refuted, that all the gods of antiquity resolved themselves into the solar fire, sometimes itself as God, or sometimes as emblem or Shekinah of that higher principle, known by the name of the creative being or God. The opinions here alluded to are of so profound a nature, that they seem to bespeak a state of the human mind superior to anything to be met with in what we have been accustomed to consider or call ancient times. From their philosophical truth and universal reception in the world, I am strongly inclined to refer them to the authors of the Neros, or to that enlightened race, supposed by Mons Bailey to have formerly existed, and to have been saved from a great catastrophe on the Himalaya mountains. This is confirmed by an observation which the reader will make in the sequel, that these doctrines have been like all the other doctrines of antiquity, gradually corrupted, incarnated, if I may be permitted to compose a word for the occasion. Sublime philosophical truths or attributes have come clothed with bodies and converted into living creatures. Perhaps this might take its origin from a wish in those professing them to conceal them from the vulgar eye. But the cause being forgotten, all ranks in society at last came to understand them in the literal sense, their real character being lost. Or perhaps this incarnation might arise from a gradual falling away of mankind from a high state of civilization, at which it must have arrived when those doctrines were discovered, into a state of ignorance, the produce of revolutions, or perhaps merely of the great law of change which in all nature seems to be eternally in operation. Page 33. The human animal, like all other animals, is in his mode of existence very much the child of accident, circumstance, habit. As he is molded in his youth, he generally continues. This is in nothing, perhaps, better exemplified that in the use of the right hand. From being carried in the right arm of his nurse, his right hand is set at liberty for action and use, while his left is at rest. The habit of using the right hand in preference to the left is thus acquired and never forgotten. A similar observation applies to the mind. Two natural causes leading men to peculiar trains or habits of thinking or using the mind may be traced all the recondite theories which we find among the early races of man. If to causes of this kind they are not to be ascribed, I should be glad to know where their origins are to be looked for. If they be not in these causes to be found, we must account for them by inventing a history of the adventures of some imagined human being, after the manner of the Greeks and many others, whose priests never had a difficulty, always having a fable ready for the amusement of their credulous votaries. Page 34. That the sun was the first object of the adoration of mankind, I apprehend, is a fact, which I shall be able to place beyond the reach of reasonable doubt. An absolute proof of this fact the circumstances of the case put it out of our power to produce. But it is supported by reason and common sense, and by the traditions of all nations, when carefully examined to their foundations, the allegorical accounts or mythoses of different countries, the inventions of an advanced state of society, inasmuch as they are really only allegorical accounts or mythoses, operate nothing against this doctrine. When, after ages of ignorance and error, man became in some degree civilized, and he turned his mind to a close contemplation of the fountain of light and life ? The celestial fire ? He would observe among the earliest discoveries which he would make, that by its powerful agency all nature was called into action, that to its return in the spring season the animal and vegetable creation were indebted for their increase as well as for their existence. It is probable that for this reason chiefly the sun, in early times, was believed to be the creator, and became the first object of adoration. This seems to be only a natural effect of such a cause. After some time it would be discovered that this powerful and beneficent agent, the solar fire, was the most potent destroyer, and hence would arise the first idea of a creator and destroyer united in the same person. But such time would not elapse before it must have been observed that the destruction caused by this powerful being was destruction only in appearance, that destruction was only reproduction in another form ? Regeneration, that if he appeared sometimes to destroy, he constantly repaired the injury which he seemed to occasion ? And that, without the light and heat, everything would dwindle away into a cold, inert, unprolific mass. Thus at once, in the same being, became concentrated the creating, the preserving, and the destroying powers, ? In India, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, in Persia, Aurangzeb, Mithra, and Eremanius, in Egypt, Osiris, Neith, and Typhon, in each case three persons and one god, and thus arose the Trimurti, or the celebrated Trinity. Page 37. We may venture, I think, to presume that adoration must first have arisen either from fear or admiration, in fact, from feeling. As an object of feeling, the sun instantly offered himself. The effect arising from the daily experience of his beneficence does not seem to be of such a nature as to wear away by use, as is the case with most feelings of this kind. He obtrudes himself on our notice in every way. But what is there in the earth on which we tread, and which is nothing without the sun, which should induce the half-civilized man to suppose it an active agent ? Suppose that it created itself, he would instantly see that it was, in itself, to all appearance an inert, dead, unprolific mass, and it must, I think, have required exertion of metaphysical subtlety, infinitely graver than my Trinity must have required, to arrive at a pantheism so completely removed from the common apprehension of the human understanding. In my original theory, everything is natural and seductive. In the other, everything is unnatural and repulsive. General. Chap. 1. Page 37. Of equal or nearly equal date, and almost equally disseminated throughout the world with the doctrine of the Trinity, was that of the hermaphroditic or androgynous character of the deity. Man could not help observing and meditating upon the differences of the sexes. He was conscious that he himself was the highest in rank of all creatures of which he had knowledge, and he very properly and very naturally, as far as was in his power, made God after the being of highest rank known to him, after himself, thus it might be said, that in his own image, in idea, made he his God. But of what sex was this God, to make him neuter, supposing man to have become grammarian enough to have invented a neuter gender, was to degrade him to the rank of a stone. To make him female was evidently more analogous to the general productive and prolific characters of the author of the visible creation. To make him masculine, was still more analogous to man's own person, and to his superiority over the female, the weaker vessel. But still this was attended with many objections. From a consideration of all these circumstances, an union of the two was adopted, and he was represented as being androgynous, page 37 of all the different attributes of the Creator, or faculties conferred by him on his creatures. There is no one so striking or so interesting to a reflecting person as that of the generative power. This is the most incomprehensible and mysterious of the powers of nature. When all the agents or accidents of every kind so interesting to the passions and feelings of man are considered, it is not wonderful that this subject should be found in some way or other to have a place among the first of the human superstitions. Thus everywhere we find it accompanying the triune God, called Trimurti or Trinity, just described, under the very significant form of the single obelisk or stone pillar, denominated the Lingam or Phallus, asterisk and the equally significant Yoni or Ptis, the female organ of generation, sometimes single, often in conjunction, asterisk Religion de l'Antiquité, par Kruiser, Notes, Introd, p. 525 page 38 The next step after man had once convinced himself of the existence of a God would be, I think, to discover the doctrine of the immortality of the soul. Long before he arrived at this point, he must have observed, and often attempted to account for, the existence of moral evil, how to reconcile this apparent blot in the creation to the beneficence of an all-powerful Creator, would be a matter of great difficulty. He had probably recourse to the only contrivance which was open to him, a contrivance to which he seems to have been driven by a wise dispensation of providence, the doctrine of a future state of existence, where the ills of this world would find a remedy, and the accounts of good and evil be balanced, where the good man would receive his reward, and the bad one his punishment. This seems to me to be the probable result of the contemplation of the existence of evil by the profound primeval Oriental philosophers, who first invented the doctrine of the Trinity. Other considerations would lend their assistance to produce the same result. After man had discovered the doctrine of the immortality of the soul, the metempsychosis followed the doctrine of the reproduction or regeneration by the third person of the triune God, by a very natural process, as the doctrine of the triune of God had before arisen by an easy process from the consideration by man of the qualities of the beings around him. Everywhere, throughout all nature, the law that destruction was reproduction appeared to prevail. This united to the natural fondness for immortality, of which every human being is conscious, led to the conclusion that man, the elite of the creation, could not be accepted from the general rule, that he did but die to live again, to be regenerated. A consciousness of his own frailty gradually caused a belief that he was regenerate in some human body or the body of some animal as a punishment for his offenses, until by repeated penances of this kind, his soul had paid the forfeit of the crimes of its first incarnation, had become purified from all stain, and in a state finally to be absorbed into the celestial influence, or united to the substance of the Creator. As it happens in every sublunary concern, the law of change corrupted these simple principles in a variety of ways, and we find the destroyer made into a demon or devil, at war with the preserver or with the Creator. Hence arose the doctrine of the two principles opposed to each other, of Oromazes and Eremanius in perpetual war, typified by the higher and lower hemispheres of the earth, of winter and summer, of light and darkness, as we shall find developed in a variety of ways. What could be natural is to allot to the destroyer the lower hemisphere of cold and darkness, of winter, misery, and famine, what so natural is to allot to the beneficent preserver the upper hemisphere of genial warmth, of summer, happiness, and plenty. Hence came the festivals of the equinoxes and of the solstices, much of the complicated machinery of the heathen mythology, and of judicial astrology. Page 39 Moral evil is a relative term. Its correlative is moral good. Without evil there is no good. Without good there is no evil. There is no such thing known to us as good or evil per se. We have no experience of moral good or of moral evil except as relative and correlative to one another. Therefore, we are with respect to them as we are with respect to God. Page 40. Many of the early fathers of the Christians held the doctrine of the metempsychosis, which they defended on several texts of the New Testament. It was an opinion which had a very general circulation both in the East and in the West. It was held by the Parises or Parcees, as they ought to be called, among the Jews, and among the Christians by Origen, Chalcidius, if he were a Christian, Synesius, and by the Simonians, Basilidians, Valentinians, Marcionites, and the Gnostics in general. It was held by the Chinese, and, among the most learned of the Greeks, by Plato and Pythagoras. Thus this doctrine was believed by nearly all the great and good or every religion, and of every nation and age. And though the present race has not the smallest information more than its ancestors on this subject, yet the doctrine has not now a single votary in the western part of the world. The metempsychosis was believed by the celebrated Christian apologist, Soame Jenyns, perhaps the only believer in it of the moderns in the western world. The following observations tend not only to throw light on the doctrine of the Indians, the earliest philosophers of whom we have any genuine records, but they also shew that their doctrine is identically the same as that of certain individuals of the Western philosophers, who, recorded traditions inform us, actually traveled in very remote ages to the country of the Brahmins to learn it. Pythagoras, returning from his Eastern travels to Greece, taught the doctrine of the metempsychosis, and the existence of a supreme being, by whom the universe was created, and by whose providence it is preserved, that the soul of mankind are emanations of that being. Socrates, the wisest of the ancient philosophers, seems to have believed that the soul existed before the body, and that death relieves it from those seeming contrarieties to which it is subject, by its union with our material part. Plato, in conformity with the learned Hindus, asserted that God infused into matter a portion of his divine spirit, which animates and moves it, that mankind have two souls of separate and different natures, the one corruptible, the other immortal, that the latter is a portion of the divine spirit, that the mortal soul ceases to exist with the life of the body, but the divine soul, no longer clogged by its union with matter, continues its existence, either in a state of happiness or punishment, that the souls of the virtuous return, after death, into the source whence they flowed, while the souls of the wicked, after being for a certain time confined to a place destined for their reception, are sent back to earth to animate other bodies. Aristotle supposes the souls of mankind to be portions or emanations of the divine spirit, which at death quit the body, and, like a drop of water falling into the ocean, are absorbed into the divinity. Zeno, the founder of the Stoic sect, taught that throughout nature there are two eternal qualities, the one active, the other passive, that the former is a pure and subtle ether, the divine spirit, and that the latter is in itself entirely inert, until united with the active principle, that the divine spirit, acting upon matter, produces fire, air, water, earth, that the divine spirit is the efficient principle, and that all nature is moved and conducted by it. He believed also that the soul of man, being a portion the universal soul, returns after death to its first source. The opinion of the soul being an emanation of the divinity, which is believed by the Hindus, and was professed by Greeks, seems likewise to have been adopted by the early Christians. Macrobius observes, Animarum originem immanere disi hello, interrect philosophens indubitati constant es fidet. Saint Justin says, the soul is incorruptible, because it emanates from God, and his disciple Tantanus, the Assyrian, observes, that man having received a portion of the divinity, is immortal as God is. Such was the system of the ancient philosophers, Pythagoreans, Brahmins, and some sects of the Christians. Forbes, Orient, Mem, Volume, IIIXXXIIIP, 261 page 41. The oldest philosophy or mythology of which we have any certain history, is that of the Buddha of the Eastern nations, in which are to be found the various doctrines to which I have just alluded. From the metempsychosis arose the repugnance among the Taoists to the slaughter of animals. A necessary consequence of this doctrine uncorrupted and sincerely believed. From the circumstance in the first book of Genesis, or Book of Wisdom, which probably a work of the Duists, the slaughter of animals is prohibited or not allowed. After a time the mild doctrines of Buddha came to be changed or corrupted and superseded by those of Krishna. Hence in the second book of Genesis, or the book of the generations, or regenerations of the planetary bodies, which is, I think, a Brahman work, they are allowed to be used for sacrifice. In the third book, or the book of generations, or regenerations of the race of man, the Adam, they are first allowed to be eaten as food. Book 1, Chapter 3. The sun, the first object of adoration of all nations? Question mark. The gods, not deceased heroes? Question mark. The Chinese have only one god? Question mark. Hindu goddesses? Question mark. Toleration and change in religions? Page 43. Socrates, Pythagoras, Plato, Zoroaster or Zaratust, Mansi, and all those initiated in the most secret mysteries, acknowledged one supreme god, the Lord and first cause of all, and perhaps, though it can never be certainly known, those who only received the lesser mysteries, asterisk, might confine their worship to the sun and the hosts of heaven. But it was only the vulgar and ignorant who bent the knee to the stone, wood, or metal idols of the gods, perhaps only a little more numerous than the images of the Christian saints. Asterisk. An interesting account of the mysteries of the heathen will be found in Part 2, of Volume II of Dupuis's History of All Religions, page 47. The Chinese, with all their apparent idolatry, had only one god. Speaking of the religion of the Chinese, Sir W. Jones asterisk says, of the religious opinions entertained by Confucius and his followers, we may glean a general notion from the fragments of their works, translated by Couplet. They professed a firm belief in the supreme God, and gave a demonstration of his being and of his providence, from the exquisite beauty and perfection of the celestial bodies, and the wonderful order of nature in the whole fabric of the visible world. From this belief they deduced a system of ethics, which the philosopher sums up in a few words at the close of the Lunan. He, says Confucius, who shall be fully persuaded the Lord of Heaven governs the universe, who shall in all things choose moderation, who shall perfectly know his own species, and so act among them, that his life and manners may conform to his knowledge of God and man, may be truly said to discharge all the duties of a sage, and to be exalted above the common herd of the human race. Asterisk dis, VII, p. 227. Marco Polo informs us, that in his time the Chinese paid their adoration to a tablet fixed against the wall in their houses, upon which was inscribed the name of the high, celestial, and supreme God, to whose honor they burn incense, but of whom they had no image. The words, Mr. Marson says, which were on the tablets were 3, heaven, home teen, supreme heaven, and shamtai, sovereign lord. Diganus tells us, that the word teen stands indifferently for the visible heaven and the supreme deity. Asterisk. Marco Polo tells us, that from the god whose name was on the tablet the Chinese only petitioned for two things, sound intellect and health of body, but that they had another god, of whom they had a statue or idol called Natagai, who was the god of all terrestrial things. In fact, God, the creator of this world, inferior and subordinate to the supreme being, from which they petition for fine weather, or whatever else they want? Question mark. A sort of mediator. Here is evidently a striking similarity to the doctrines of some of the early Christians' heretics. Asterisk Tom. II, p. 350. It seems pretty clear from this account, that originally, and probably at this time also, like all the ancients of the West in the midst of their degrading idolatry, they yet acknowledged one supreme God, with many subordinate agents, precisely the same as the heathens of Greece and Rome, and modern Christians, under the names of inferior gods, angels, demons, saints, and see, in fact they were deists. Page 48. In addition to the authorities which have been produced to prove the whole of the different gods of antiquity resolve themselves at last, when properly examined, into different names of the god Sol, it would be easy, if it were necessary, to produce many more from every quarter of the world. But what, it may be asked, will you do with the goddesses? The reader shall now see, and first from the learned and reverend, Mr. Norris. Whoever will read the Gita with attention will perceive in that small tract the outlines of nearly all the various systems of theology of Asia, that curious and ancient doctrine of the Creator being both male and female, mentioned in a preceding page to be designated in Indian temples by a very indecent exhibition of the masculine and feminine organs of generation and union, occurs in the following passage. I am the father and mother of this world. I plant myself upon my own nature, and create again and again this assemblage of beings. I am generation and dissolution, the place where all things are deposited, and the inexhaustible seed of all nature. I am the beginning, the middle, and the end of all things. And another part he more directly says, the great Brahmi is the womb of all those various forms which are conceived in every natural womb, and I am the father that soweth the seed. Page 49. Manichaeus, according to Theodoret, said, in his allegorical language, that a male virgin gave light and life to Eve, that is, created her, and the pseudo-Mercurius Trismegistus and Pimander said, that God being male and female, the Trinoclage WN, because he is light and life, engendered by the word another intelligence, which was the creator. The male virgin, Theodoret says, was called Joel, or Yol, which Bosober thinks was El, God, and Yoha, life-making, vivifying, life-giving, or the generating God. So far my friend Beverly, but which was probably merely the ampersand question mark AU, L, or God IOU, of which we shall treat hereafter. Again, Mr. Beverly says, in Genesis it is written, God said, let us create man after our own image and likeness. This, then, thought in strictness of language to be a male and female God, or else it would not be after the likeness proposed. The male virgin of the Arianals is, I know, considered the same by Plato as his Aegia, or Vesta, whom he calls the soul of the body of the universe. This Hesta, by the way, is in my view a Sanskrit lady, whose name I take to have been Est, or she that is, or exists, having the same meaning as the great of the Jewish deity. A is shown in the Celtic truths to be a Sanskrit word, and I do not doubt of this her derivation. The terminal is added by the Greek idiom to denote a female, as they hated an indeclinable proper name, such as Hest or Est would have been. Extract from a letter from Mackenzie Beverly, Esquire. Asterisk asterisk the at the end of the word est may be the Chaldee emphatic article, then Vesta would be the est of the self-existent. The following extract from Sir W. Jones's dissertation on the gods of Greece and India, we must not be surprised at finding, on a close examination, that the characters of all the pagan deities, male and female, melt into each other, and at last into one or two, for it seems a well-founded opinion that the whole crowd of gods and goddesses in ancient Roman modern verns, mean only the powers of nature, and principally those of the sun, expressed in a variety of ways, and by a multitude of fanciful names. Page 50. Thus, we see, there is in fact an end of all the multitude of the heathen gods and goddesses, so disguised in the pantheons and books of various kinds, which the priests have published from time to time to instill into the minds of their pupils question mark that the ancient heathen philosophers and legislators were the slaves of the most degrading superstition, that they believed such nonsense as the metamorphoses described by Ovid, or the loves of Jupiter, Venus, and sea, that the rabble were the victims of a degrading superstition. I have no doubt, this was produced by the knavery of the ancient priests. And it is in order to reproduce this effect that the modern priests have misrepresented the doctrines of their predecessors. By vilifying and running down the religion of the ancients, they have thought they could persuade their votaries that their new religion was necessary for the good of mankind, a religion which, in consequence of their corruptions, has been found to be in practice much worse and more injurious to the interests of society than the old one. For, from these corruptions the Christian religion, the religion of purity and truth when uncorrupted question mark has not brought peace but a sword, after the astrologers had parcelled out the heavens into the forms of animals, and sea, and the annual path of the sun had become divided into 12 parts, each part designated by some animal, or other figure, or known emblem, it is not surprising that they should have become the objects of adoration. This M. Dupuis has shown, asterisk was the origin of the Arabian and Egyptian adoration of animals, birds, and sea. Hence, in the natural progress of events, the adoration of images arose among the heathens and Christians. Asterisk ch. I. Rel. Univ. M. Dupuis, in his first chapter, has shown that probably all nations first worshipped, as we are told the Persians did, without altars or temples, in groves and high places. After a certain number of years, in Persia, came temples and idols, with all their abuses. And these, in their turn, were changed or abolished, and the worship of the sun restored, or perhaps the worship of the sun only as emblem of the Creator. This was probably the change said to have been effected by Zoroaster. The Israelites at the Exodus had evidently run into the worship of Apis the bull, or the golden calf of Egypt, which it was the object of Moses to abolish, and in the place thereof to substitute the worship of one God Jehovah, which, in fact, was only the sun or the solar fire, yet not the sun, as creator, but as emblem of or Shekinah of the divinity. Book 1, Chapter 4 to Ancient Ethiopia's Great Black Nation in Asia The Buddha of India a Negro The Arabians were Kushites. Shepherd kings Hindus and Egyptians similar Syria peopled from India page 51. But I shall, in the course of this work, produce a number of extraordinary facts, which will be quite sufficient to prove that a black race, in very early times, had more influence over the affairs of the world than has been lately suspected. And I think I shall show, by some striking circumstances yet existing, that the effects of this influence have not entirely passed away. It was the opinion of Sir William Jones that a great nation of blacks formerly possessed the dominion of Asia and held the seat of empire at Sidon. These must have been the people called by Mr. Maurice Cushites or Cuthites, described in Genesis, and the opinion that they were blacks is corroborated by the translators of the Pentateuch, called the 70, constantly rendering the word Cush by Ethiopia. Of this nation we have no account, but it must have flourished after the deluge. If I succeed in collecting a sufficient number to carry conviction to an impartial mind, the empire must be allowed to have existed. The religion of Buddha, of India, is well known to have been very ancient. In the most ancient temples scattered throughout Asia, where his worship is yet continued, he is found black as jet, with a flat face, thick lips, and curly hair of the Negro. Several statues of him may be met with the East India Company. There are two exemplars of him brooding on the face of the deep, upon a coiled serpent. To what time are we to allot this Negro? He will be proved to have been prior to Krishna. He must have been prior to or contemporaneous with the Black Empire, supposed by Sir William Jones to have flourished at Sidon. The religion of this Negro god is found, by the ruins of his temples and other circumstances, to have been spread over an immense extent of country, even to the remotest parts of Britain, and to have been professed by devotees inconceivably numerous. Page 53. The circumstance of the translators of the Septuagint version of the Pentateuch having rendered the word Kush by the word Ethiopia, is a very decisive proof that the theory of two Ethiopias is well founded. Let the translators have been who they may, it is totally impossible to believe that they could be so ignorant as to suppose that the African Ethiopia could border on the Euphrates, or that the Kushites could be African Ethiopia. Page 54 Eusebius asterisk states the Ethiopians to have come and settled in Egypt, in the time of Amenophis. According to this account, as well as to the account given by Philostratus, there was no such country as Ethiopia beyond Egypt until this invasion. According to Eusebius these people came from the river Indus, and planted themselves to the south of Egypt, in the country called from them Ethiopia. The circumstances named by Eusebius that they came from the Indus, at all events, implies that they came from the east, and not from the south, and would induce a person to suspect them as having crossed the Red Sea from Arabia. Asterisk in Quran, ad number 402. In Vita Apollon, Tyana, Herodotus says that there were two Ethiopian nations, one in India, the other in Egypt. He derived his information from the Egyptonian priests, a race of people who must have known the truth. Philostratus asterisk says that the gymnosophists of Ethiopia, who settle near the sources of the Nile, descended from the Brahmins of India, having been driven thence for the murder of their king. This, Philostratus says, he learned from an ancient Brahmin, called Jarkus. Asterisk Vita Apol. C. I. Crawford, Res. Volume, IIP, 193. Another ancient writer, Eustachius, also states that the Ethiopians came from India. These concurring accounts can scarcely be doubted, and here may be discovered the mode and time also when great numbers of ancient rites and ceremonies might be imported from India into Egypt. Page 57. Mr. Wilsford, in his treatise on Egypt and the Nile, in the Asiatic Researches, informs us that many very ancient statues of the god Buddha in India have crisp, curly hair, with flat noses and thick lips, and adds, nor can it be reasonably doubted that a race of Negroes formerly had power and preeminence in India. This is confirmed by Mr. Maurice, who says, the figures in the Hindu caverns are of a very different character from the present race of Hindus. Their countenances are broad and full, the nose flat, and the lips, particularly the underlip, remarkably thick. Justin states that the Nishans being obliged to leave their native country in the east, they settled first near the Assyrian lake, which is the Persian Gulf. And Maurice says, we find an extensive district, named Palestine, to the east of the Euphrates and Tigris. The word Palestine seems derived from Palestine, the seat of the palace or shepherds. Pali, in India, means shepherd. It is a well-known fact that our Hindu soldiers, when they arrived in Egypt in the late war, recognized the gods of their country in the ancient temples, particularly their god Krishna. The striking similarity, indeed identity, of the style of architecture and the ornaments of the ancient Egyptian and Hindu temples, Mr. Maurice has proven beyond all doubt. Page 59. In my essay on the Celtic Druids, I have shown that a great nation called Celti, of whom the Druids were the priests, spread themselves almost over the whole earth, and are to be traced in their rude gigantic monuments from India to the extremities of Britain. Who these can have been but the early individuals of the black nation of whom we have been treating I know not, and in this opinion I am not singular. The learned Maurice says, Cuthites, i.e., Celts, built the great temples in India and Britain, and excavated the caves of the former. Asterisk in the learned mathematician, Reuben Burrow, has no hesitation in pronouncing Stonehenge to be a temple of the black, curly-headed Buddha. Asterisk Maurice, Hist, Hind, Volume, IIP, 249, Volume 1, Book 2, Chapter 1. The Ancient Persians of the Religion of Abraham? First Books of Genesis. Disingenuous conduct in the translatory of the Bible? Abraham acknowledged more than one God? Page 60. Although it may not be possible to make out a connected and complete system, yet it will be no difficult matter to show that, one particular time, the worship of the Assyrians, Chaldeans, Persians, Babylonians, was that of one supreme God, that the sun was worshipped as an emblem only of the divinity, and that the religions of Abraham, of the children of Israel, and of these eastern nations were originally the same. Page 61. In the first verse of the first book Genesis, the Elohim, which will be proved to be the Trinity, being in the plural number, are said by wisdom to have formed, from matter previously existing, the Smim, or planetary bodies, which were believed by the Magi to be the rulers or directors of the affairs of men. This opinion I shall examine by and by. From this it is evident that this is in fact a Persian, or still more Eastern, mythos. Again, in the first book, man and woman are created at the same time. In the second, they are created at different times. Again, in the first book, the fruit of all the trees is given to man. In the second, this is contradicted by one tree being expressly forbidden. These are in fact two different accounts of the creation. The beginning of the fifth chapter, or third tract, seems to be a repetition of the first, to connect it with the history of the flood. The world is described as being made by God, Elohim, and not as in the second by Jehovah or the God Jehovah or Jehovah Elohim. And, as in the first, the man and woman are made at one time, and not, as in the second, at different times. The account of the birth of Seth, given in the 25th verse of the 4th chapter, and the repetition of the same event in the 3rd verse of the 5th chapter, or the beginning of the 3rd tract, are a clear proof that these tracts are by different persons, or, at least, are separate and distinct works. The reason why the name Seth is given here, and not the names of any of the later Adam's children, is evidently to connect Adam with Noah and the flood. The object of 3rd tract, the permission in the third tract to eat animals, implying that it was not given before, is strictly in keeping with the denial of it in the first. The histories of the creation, both in the first and in the second book of Genesis, in the sacred books of the Persians, and in those of the Chaldeans, are evidently different versions of the same story. The Chaldeans state the world to have been created not in 6 days, but in 6 periods of time? The lengths of the periods not being fixed. The Persians, also, divided the time into 6 periods. In the second book, a very well-known account is given of the origin of evil, which is an affair most closely interwoven with every part of the Christian system, but it is in fact nothing more than an Oriental mythos, which may have been taken from the history of the Brahmins, in whose books the principal incidents are to be found. And, in order to put this matter out of doubt, it will only be necessary to turn to the plates, 2 figs, 2, 3, 4, taken from icons in the very oldest of the caves of Hindostan, excavated, as it is universally agreed, long prior to the Christian era. The reader will find the first to be the seed of the woman bruising the serpent's head, the second, the serpent biting the foot of her seed, the Hindu god Krishna, the second person of the Trinity, and the third, the Spirit of God brooding over the face of the waters. The history in Genesis is here so closely depicted that it is impossible to doubt the identity of the two. Among the Persians and all the Oriental nations it has been observed that the Creator or God was adored under a triple form in fact in the form of a trinity. In India, this was Brahma, Krishna or Vishnu, and Shiva. In Persia, it was Ormazd, Mithra, and Arvamanius. In each case the Creator, the Preserver, and the Destroyer. Page 62. The fact that Abraham worshipped several gods, who were, in reality, the same as those of the Persians, namely, the Creator, Preserver, and the Destroyer, has been long asserted, and the assertion has been very unpalatable both to the Jews and many Christians. And to obviate or disguise what they could not account for, they have had recourse, in numerous instances, to the mistranslation of the original. Page 63. The doctrine of a plurality, shown above in the Pentateuch, is confirmed in the later books of the Jews. Book 2, Chapter 2 on the word Elohim or Jewish Trinity? Sada Adonis. Trinity of the Rabbis? Meaning of the words Al-Anel. Page 64. Perhaps there is no word in any language which has been more written about than the word Elohim, or as modern Jews corruptly call it, Elohim. But all its difficulties are at once removed by considering it as a representation of the united Godhead, the Trinity in unity, the three persons in one God. Page 65. The meaning of mediator, preserver, or intervener, joined to its character of a noun of multitude, at once identifies it with the Trinity of the Gentiles. Christians will be annoyed to find their God called by the same name with that of the heathen gods. But this is only what took place when he was called $? SDY, Sadi, Saim, or +, Adni, Adonai, or Adonis, plus, Adon, or -3, Baal, Baal, so that there is nothing unusual in this. Page 66. It seems not unlikely that by the different modes of writing the word, all, a distinction of sexes should originally have been intended to be expressed. The heathen divinities, Ashtaroth and Baal Zebub, were both called Elohim, and the Venus Aphrodite, Urania and C, were of both genders. The god Mithra, the savior, was both male and female. It appears that in these old books, God is called by names which are sometimes singular, sometimes plural, sometimes masculine, and sometimes feminine. But though he be occasionally of each gender, for he must be of the masculine or feminine gender, because the old language has no neuter, he is not called by any name which conveys the idea of goddess or a feminine nature, as separable from himself. My idea is very abstruse and difficult to explain. He is, in fact, in every case androgynous, for in no case which I have produced is a term used exclusively belonging to one sex or the other. He is never called Baltz, or Astaroth, or Queen of Heaven. Many Christians, no doubt, will be much alarmed and shocked at the idea of the word Ale being of the feminine gender. But why should not the Hebrew language have a feminine to the word Al, as the English have a feminine to the word God, in goddess, or the Romans in the words deus and dea? And why should not God be of the feminine gender as easily as of the masculine? Who knows what gender God is? Who at this day is so foolish as to fancy that God is of any gender? We have seen that all the gods of the Gentiles were of both genders. We find God called Al, Ale, Alu, Alam, and Elim more frequently Elim than any other name. Page 67. The god Baal was both masculine and feminine, and the god of the Jews was once called Baal. The word Elim %, has been derived from the Arabic word Allah God, by many learned men, Veal, Articulo Emphatico Alala, Callio, of the Arabians, is evidently the Baal of the Chaldees or Jews. Page 68. In the first verse of Genesis the word Elim is found without any particle before it, and, therefore, thought to be literally translated gods formed. But in the second chapter of Exodus in 23rd verse, the emphatic article %e is found, and therefore it ought to be translated, that their cry came up to the gods, or the Elim. In the same manner the first verse of the third chapter ought to have the mountains of the gods, or, of the Elim, even to Horeb, instead of the mountains of God. Persons who have not given much consideration to these subjects will be apt to wonder that any people should be found to offer adoration to the evil principle, but they do not consider that, in all these recondite systems, the evil principle, or the destroyer, or lord of death, was at the same time the regenerator. He could not destroy, but to reproduce, and it was probably not till this principle began to be forgotten, that the evil being, per se, arose, for in some nations, this effect seems to have taken place. Thus Baal Zebub is in Iberno-Celtic, Baal Lord, and Zabdeth, Lord of Death, but he is also called Elim, the same as the God of the Israelites, and this is right, because he was one of the Trimurdial Trinity. If I be correct respecting the word Elim being feminine, we here see the Lord of Death of the feminine gender, but the goddess Ashtaroth or Astarte, the Eostre of the Germans, was also called Elim. Here again Elim is feminine, which shows that I am right in making Elim the plural feminine. Thus we have distinctly found Elim the creator, general, I, 1, Elim the preserver, and Elim the destroyer, and this not by inference, but literally expressed. We have also the APIs or bull of Egypt expressly called Elim, and its plurality admitted on authority not easily disputed. Aaron says, %, Alalik, these are thy Elim who brought thee out of the land of Egypt, **Parkhurst. P. 221. The 26th verse of the first chapter of Genesis completely establishes the plurality of the word Elim. And then said Elim, we will man in our image according to our likeness. Page 69. On the 22nd verse of the third chapter of Genesis, my worthy and excellent old friend, Drive, A. Geddes, Vicar Apostolic of the Roman See in London, says, **Lo, Adam or man is become like one of us. If there be any passage in the Old Testament which countenances a plurality of persons in the Godhead, or, to speak more properly, a plurality of gods, it is this passage. He does not simply say, like us, but like one of us and one. This can hardly be explained as we have explained %31 let us make, and I confess it has always appeared to me to imply a plurality of gods, in some sense or other. It is well known that the Lord or Jehovah, is called in the Hebrew scriptures, the God of gods. He is also represented as a sovereign sitting on his throne, attended by all the heavenly host, in Job called the sons of God. Again he says, wherever Jehovah is present, whether on Sinai or Sin, there he is attended by 20,000 angels, of the cherubic order. When he appeared to Jacob, at Bethel, he was attended by angels, and again when he wrestled with the same patriarch, **Crit. Rem. General. The Third. Pp. 48, 49. Page 70. The God of the Jews is also known by the name of Adonai +, but his is nothing but the God of the Syrians, Adonis or the Sun, the worship of whom is reprobated under the name of Thomas, in Ezekiel VI, 14. From these examples it is evident that the God of the Jews had several names, and that these were often the names of heathen gods also. All this has a strong tendency to show that the Jewish and Gentile systems were, at the bottom, the same. Why we call God masculine I know not, nor do I apprehend can any good reason be given. Surely the ancients, who described him as of both genders, or of the doubtful gender, were more reasonable. Here we see that the God of the Jews is called +, SDI, and that this SDI is the Dei Multimammia, who is also in other places made to be the same as the AL or %, AL, Therefore, it seems to follow that the gods of the Israelites and of the Gentiles were in the originals the same, and I think by and by my reader will see evident proof that the religion of Moses was but a sect of that of the Gentiles, or, if he like it better, that the religion of the Gentiles was but a sect of the religion of Jehovah, or of Moses. Page 71 Drive, Alex, on General, I, 10, says, that the Kabbalists constantly added the letter Jod, being the first letter of the word due to the word Elohim for the sake of a mystery. The Rabbi Bichai says, it is to shew that there is a divinity in each person included in the word. This is, no doubt, part of the Kabbalah, or esoteric religion of the Jews. Maimonides says, the vulgar Jews were forbidden to read the history of the creation, for fear it should lead them into idolatry, probably for fear they should worship the Trimurti of India, of the Trinity of Persia. The fear evidently shews that the fearful persons thought there was a plurality in Genesis, Book 2, Chapter 3 Esdras and the Ancient Jewish Kabbalah Emanations. What? Meaning of the word Bereshit Sephiroth's Emanations continued Origin of Time Planets or Simon Observations on the preceding sections Page 72 As all ancient heathen nations had their mysteries or secret doctrines, which the priests carefully kept from the knowledge of the vulgar, and which they only communicated to a select number of persons whom they thought they could safely trust, and as the Jewish religion was anciently the same as the Persian, it will not be thought extraordinary that, like the Persians, it should have its secret doctrines. So we find it had its Kabbalah, which, though guarded like all ancient mysteries, with the most anxious care, and the most solemn oaths, and what is still worst, almost lost amidst the confusion of civil brawls, cannot be entirely hidden from the prying curiosity of the moderns. The doctrine here alluded to was a secret one more perfect, the Jews maintain, than that delivered in the Pentateuch. And they also maintain that it was given by God, on Mount Sinai, to Moses verbally and not written, and that this is the doctrine described in the fourth book of Esdras, ch. Shiv, 6, 26, and 45. Thus, these words shalt thou declare, and these shalt thou hide, and when thou hast done, some things shalt thou publish, and some things shalt thou shew secretly to the wise. The Highest spake, saying, the first that thou hast written publish openly, that the worthy and the unworthy may read it, but keep the 70 lest, that thou mayest deliver them only to such as be wise among the people, for in them is the spring of understanding, the fountain of wisdom. The following passage may serve, at present, as an outline of what was the general nature of the Kabbalah, the similarity, or rather the coincidence, of the Kabbalistic, Alexandrian, and Oriental philosophy, will be sufficiently evinced by briefly stating the common tenets in which these different systems agreed. They are as follow. All things are derived by emanation from one principle, and this principle is God. From him the substantial power immediately proceeds, which is the image of God, and the source of all subsequent emanations. This second principle sends forth, by the energy of emanation, other natures, which are more or less perfect, according to their different degrees of distance in the scale of emanation, from the first source of existence, and which constitute different worlds, or order of beings, all united to the eternal power from which they proceed. Matter is nothing more than the most remote effect of the emanative energy of the deity. The material world receives its form from the immediate agency of powers far beneath the first source of being. Evil is the necessary effect of the imperfection of matter. Human souls are distant emanations from deity, and after they are liberated from their material vehicles, will return, through various stages of purification, to the fountain whence they first proceeded. **Drive, Recent Cyclopedia, Art, Kabbalah page 73 The ancient Persians believed that the Supreme Being was surrounded with angels, or what they called eons or emanations, from the divine substance. This was also the opinion of the Manichaeans, and of almost all the Gnostic sects of Christians. Perhaps in the languages of the world no two words have been of greater importance than the first two in the book of Genesis, Bereshit, for they are properly two not one word, and great difference of opinion has arisen among learned men, respecting the meaning of them. Grotius renders them, when first, Simeon, before, Tertullian, in power, Rabbi Bichai and Castellio, in order before all, Onkelos, the Septuagint, Yohathan ben Uziel, and the modern translators, in the beginning, but the official or accredited and admitted authority of the Jewish religion, the Jerusalem Targum, renders them by wisdom. To the celebrated and learned Bosober I am indebted for the most important discovery of the secret doctrine in this word, he says, the Jews, instead of translating Bereshit by the words in the beginning, translate it by the principle, parla principi, active and immediate of all things, God made, and see, that is to say, according to the Targum of Jerusalem, by wisdom, parla sagesse, God made, and see, **, Bosober, hist, manic, live, die, ch, I, p, 290, page 74. Bosober also informs us, Maimonides maintains, that this is the only literal and true meaning of the word, and Maimonides is generally allowed to have been one of the most learned of modern Jews. He lived in the 12th century. Bosober further says, that Chalcidius, Methodius, Origen, and Clemens Alexandrinus, a most formidable phalanx of authorities, give it this sense. Bosober gives us the expression of Clemens, this is what street, Peter says, who has very well understood this word, God has made the heaven and the earth by the principle, Dio phalaseil et later dans le principi. This principle is that which is called wisdom by all the prophets. Here is evidently the doctrine of the Magi or of emanations. Page 75. According to the Jewish Kabbalah, a number of sephiroths, being emanations, issued or flowed from God? Oft which the chief was wisdom. In Genesis it is said, by wisdom God created or formed, and see, Picus, of Merodula, confirms my rendering, and says, this wisdom is the sun, **whether the sun or not, this evidently the first emanation, Minerva? The goddess of wisdom emanating or issuing from the head of Jove, or Ia or Jehovah, as described on a Etruscan brass plate in the cabinet of antiquities at Bologna. This is known to be Etruscan, from the names being on the arms of the gods in Etruscan letters, which prove it older than the Romans, or probably than the Grecians of Homer. **D. Egypt. Syntag. II. Cap. V. A copy of the plate may be seen at Montfaucon. M. Basnage says, Moses Nachmanides advanced three sephiroths above all the rest. They have never been seen by anyone. There is not any defect in them nor any disunion. If anyone should add another to them, he would deserve death. There is, therefore, nothing but a dispute about words. You can call three lights what Christians call Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. That first eternal number is the Father. The wisdom by which God created the heavens is the Son, and prudence or understanding, which makes the third number of the Kabbalists, is the Christian Holy Ghost. Book IV, ch. V, sect. V, page 76. Wisdom was the first emanation from the divine power, the Protagonos, the beginning of all things, the Rasset of Genesis, the Buddha of India, the Logos of Plato and Street, John, as I shall prove. Wisdom was the beginning of creation. Wisdom was the primary, and beginning the secondary, meaning of the word, the meaning of wisdom, which the word res bore, I can scarcely doubt was, in fact, secret, sacred, and mystical. And in the course of the following work my reader will perceive, that wherever a certain mythos, which will be explained, was concerned, two clear and distinct meanings of the words will be found, one for the initiated, and one for the people. This is of the first importance to be remembered, that the angels are in fact emanations from the divine substance, according to the Mosaic system, as proved from Dut. XXXIII. 2. Moses says, according to the Septuagint, the Lord is come from Sinai, he has appeared to us from Seir, he shineth forth from Paran with thousands of saints, and having his angels on his right hand, but Bosober has shown, and which part thirst, p. 149, in those, plus dd, confirms, that the Hebrew word, plus, asdd, which the Septuagint translates angels, means effusions, that is, emanations, from the divine substance, according to Moses and the 70 translators. Therefore, the angels were emanations from the divine substance. Thus we see here that the doctrines of the Persians and that of the Jews, and we shall see afterwards, of the Gnostics and Manichean Christians, were in reality the same. Asterisk hist. Manic. Liv. X. Ch. The second. Page 78. I think the author of Genesis had more philosophy than to write about the beginning of the world. I cannot see any reason why so much anxiety should be shown by some modern translators to construe this word as meaning beginning. I see clearly enough why others of them should do so, and why the ancient translators did it. They had a preconceived dogma to support, their partiality to which blinded their judgment, and a philosophy they did not possess much. However, it cannot be denied that, either in a primary or secondary sense, the word means wisdom as well as beginning, and, therefore, its sense here must be gathered from the context. The two words called in the first chapter of Genesis, percent ismim, the heavens, thought to be translated the planets. In that work the sun, and moon, and the earth, are said to be formed, and also separately from them the samim or planets, and afterward the stars also. Drive. Parkhurst has very properly explained the word to mean disposers. They are described in the Chaldean oracles as a septenary of living beings. By the ancients they were thought to have, under their special care, the affairs of men. Philo was of the opinion, and even Maimonides declares, that they are endued with life, knowledge, and understanding, that they acknowledge and praise their creator. On this opinion of the nature of the planets, all judicial astrology, magic, was founded. A science, I believe, almost as generally held by the ancients, as being of a god is by the moderns. Asterisk C. Faber, Volume, II, p. 226, page 79. Persons are apt to regard with contempt the opinion that the planetary bodies are animated or rational beings, but let it not be forgotten that the really great Kepler believed or glowed to be endowed with living faculties, that it possessed instinct and volition. And hypothesis which Mons, patron, has supported with great ingenuity. Asterisk. Among those who believed that the planets were intelligent beings were Philo, Origen, and Maimonides. Asterisk. Vide Jameson's Cuvier, p. 45, and Nouveau Dict, d'Histoire Naturelle, Faber, Pag, Title, Volume, IP, 32. Page 80. The conduct of the Christian expositors, with respect to the words, smim and, dollaracet, has been as unfair as possible. They have misrepresented the meaning of them in order to prevent the true astrological character of the book from being seen. But, that the first does mean disposers, the word heavens making nonsense, and the words relating to the stars, in the 16th verse, shewing that they cannot be meant, put it beyond a question. My reader may, therefore, form a pretty good judgment how much Parkhurst can be depended upon for the meaning of the second, from the striking fact that, though he has filled several columns with observations relating to the opinions of different expositors, he could not find room for the words. The opinion of the synagogue is, that the word means wisdom, or the Jerusalem Targum says it means wisdom, but it was necessary to conceal from the English reader, as already stated, the countenance it gives to judicial astrology in the doctrine of emanations. Indeed, I think the doctrine of emanations in the Jewish system cannot be denied. This Mr. Maurice unequivocally admits, the Father is the great fountain of the divinity, the Son and the Holy Spirit are emanations from that fountain. Again, the Christian Trinity is a trinity of subsistences, or persons joined by an indissoluble union. Asterisk. The reader will be pleased to recollect that hypostasis means subsistence, which is a Greek word. Asterisk. Maurice Indiana, Ant, Volume, IV, p. 49. Whatever trifling differences or incongruities may be discovered between them, the following conclusions are inevitable, viz., that the religion of Abraham and that of the Magi were in reality the same, that they both contain the doctrine of the Trinity, and that the Oriental historians who state this fact, state only what is true. Page 81. We must also recollect, that, when I translate the first word of Genesis by the word wisdom, I am giving no new theory of my own, but only the orthodox exposition of the Jewish religion, as witnessed in the Jerusalem Targum, read in their synagogues, supported by the authorities of the most eminent of the Jewish rabbis, Maimonides, Ansi, and the most learned of the Christian fathers, Clemens, Origen, Ansi. All this is of importance to be remembered, because a great consequence will be deduced from this word wisdom. It was, as it were, the foundation on which a mighty structure was erected. It was by what may be called a peculiar hypostasis, denominated wisdom, that the higher principle operated when it formed the world. This is surely quite sufficient to shew its great importance an importance which we shall see demonstrated hereafter, when I treat of the celebrated Buddha of India. Book 2, Chapter 4 Why Cyrus Restored the Temple Melchizedek Abraham. What he was Abraham the father of the Persians Daniel Book of Esther. Persian Zoroaster Variation between Persians and Israelites Sacrifices Religion of Zoroaster Religion of Zoroaster continued Zendavesta. Observations on the religion of Jews and Persians All ancient religions Astrological page 81 From the striking similarity between the religion of Moses and that of the Persians, it is not difficult to see the reason why Cyrus, Darius, and the Persians restored the temples of Jerusalem and Gerizim, when they destroyed the temples of the idolaters in Egypt and other places, which, in fact, they did wherever they came. Drive. Shuckford not only agrees with me that Abraham and the Canaanites were of the same religion, and that Melchizedek was their priest, but he also shews that Abimelech and the Philistines were at that time of the same religion. Asterisk. He also gives some reason to suppose that the Egyptians were the same. Asterisk Book V. pp. 309, 310, Ibid. Pp. 312, 313, Shuckford says, Melchizedek, the king of Salem, was a priest of the Most High God, and he received and entertained Abraham as a true servant and particular favorite of that God, whose priest he himself was. Blessed, said he, be Abraham, servant of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth. Asterisk General, Shiv, 19, Shuckford, Book V, p. 310, respecting the rites or ceremonies performed by the priest, few particulars are known. It appears his votaries paid him tithes. Abraham, we have seen, paid him tithes of all the plunder which he took from the five kings whom he had defeated. This contribution is enforced in the religion of the ancient Persians, and also in the religious ordinances of the Jews. It is very singular that exact tenths should be found in all the three religions to be paid. The second of the rites of Melchizedek's religion which is known, is the offering or sacrifice of bread and wine. Page 83 There is much reason to believe this Melchizedek was the priest of the temple of Jove, Jupiter, or Io, without image, spoken of by the Greeks, to which Pythagoras and Plato are said to have resorted for study, the place where Joshua placed his unhewn stones, the mountain Carmel. Probably, extended over a considerable extent of country. Har Gerizim was probably looked on as a Mount of Carmel, as Mount Blanc is a Mount of the Alps. Melchizedek could not be king of the city of Jerusalem in the time of Abraham, because it was not built. Page 85 The Persians also claim Ibrahim, i.e., Abraham, for their founder, as well as the Jews. Thus we see that according to all ancient history the Persians, the Jews, and the Arabians, are descendants of Abraham, but Abraham was not merely the founder of the Persians, but various authors assert that he was a great magician, at the head of the Magi, that is, he was at the head of the priesthood, as our king is, and as the Persian kings always were, and as the Roman emperors found it necessary to become in later days, no doubt a sound and wise policy. The standards of the tribe of the Israelites, the ornaments of the temple, the pillars Joachim and Bose, the latter with its orrery or sphere at the top of it, the Urim and Thummim, in short, the whole of the Jewish system betrays judicial astrology, or, in other words, magic, in every part. The Magi of Persia were only the order of priests. Magi in Persia, clergymen in England. There can be no doubt that judicial astrology, or the knowledge of future events by the study of the stars, was received and practiced by all the ancient Jews, Persians, and many of the Christians, particularly the Gnostics and Manichaeans. Eusebius tells us, on the authority of Eubulus, that Abraham was an astrologer, and that he taught the science to the priests of Heliopolis or On. This was a fact universally asserted by the historians of the East. Origen was a believer in this science as qualified above, and M. Bosober observes, It is thus that he explained what Jacob says in the prayer of Joseph, "He has read in the tables of heaven all that will happen to you, and to your children." **Bosober. Hist. Manic. Liv. VCH. IP. 429. Page 85. When the Jews were carried away to Babylon, Daniel is said to have been one of the prisoners, and to have risen to a very high situation at the court of the great king, and in fact to have become almost his prime minister. Dan. The second. 48. On the taking of the city, he appears to have been a principal performer. He was occupied in explaining the meaning of the writing on the wall at the very moment that the city was stormed. After the success of the Persians, we find him again in power with the new king, who was of his own sect or religion, and as bitter against idolaters as himself. We also find that the Jews were again almost immediately restored to their country. I suspect that Daniel was a Chaldee or Chaldee or Brahmin priest a priest of the same order of which, in former times, Melchizedek had been a priest. Page 86. Perhaps in the Old Testament there is not a more curious book than that of Esther. It is the only remaining genuine specimen of the ancient chronicles of Persia. The object of putting this book into the canon of the Jews is to record, for their use, the origin of their feast of Purim. Michaelis is of the opinion, from the style of the writing and other circumstances, that the last 16 verses of this book were added at Jerusalem. This seems very probable. It is pretty clear, from this book, that the religion of Persia in the time of Ahasuerus, as he is named in Scripture, had begun to fall into idolatry, and that it was reformed by Mordecai, who slew 75,000 of the idolaters, and restored it to its former state, when it must have been in all its great features like that of the Jews, if not identically the same. No person who has carefully examined will deny, I think, that all the accounts which we have of Zoroaster are full of inconsistencies and contradictions. Plato says, he lived before him 6,000 years. Haydn, Prido and others, make him contemporary with Darius Hystaspes, or Daniel. By some he is made a Jew, Ast, Zer, or Sir. Here is the star or celestial body Sir or Sir, which we shall presently find, is, without any great violence, the celestial body, the bull or the sun. Hence we arrive at an incarnation of the deity, of the sun, or of Taurus a renewed incarnation. This accounts for the antiquity assigned to him by Plato, and for the finding of him again under Darius Hystaspes. In short, he is a doctrine, or a doctrine taught by person. He was the founder of the Magi, who were priests of the religion of the sun, or of the being of whom the sun was the visible form or emblem. Page 87. The Persians have a sacred book, called Sophi Ibrahim, or the Book of Abraham, but which ought to be called the Book of the Wisdom of Abraham. The Jews also have a sacred book, called the Book of Moses, and the first of which, known to us under the name of Genesis, is called by them, Dalarasit, or the Book of Wisdom. Page 89. Learned men have exercised great ingenuity in their endeavors to discover the origin and reason of sacrifices, a rite common to both Jews and heathens, in which they have found great difficulty. They have sought at the bottom of the well what was swimming on the surface. The origin of sacrifice was evidently a gift to the priest, or the cunning man, or the magus or druid, to induce him to intercede with some unknown being, to protect the timid or pardon the guilty, a trick invented by the rogues to enable them to cheat the fools, a contrivance of the idol possessing brains to live upon the labor of those without them. The sacrifice, whatever it might be in its origin, soon became a feast. See Leviathans, v. 8. **Druid is a Celtic word and has the meaning of absolver from sin. At first the sacrifice was a feast between the priest and devotee, but the former very soon contrived to keep it all for himself, and it is evident from Pliny's letter to Trajan, that, when there was more than the priest could consume, he sent the overplus to market for sale. Such is the account given of this disgusting practice. Very well has the Reverend Mr. Faber described it, as apparently an irrational notion struck out by a wild fanatic, an arbitrary and inexplicable mode hit upon by fanatics of propitiating the deity. As he justly says, why should that righteous man, meaning Abel, have imagined that he could please the deity, by slaying a firstling lamb, and by burning it upon an altar? What connection is there betwixt the means and the end? Abel could not have known, that God, as a merciful God, took no pleasure in the sufferings of the lamb. How, then, Are we to account for his attempting to please such a god? By what abstractedly is an act of cruelty? Asterisk. What strange beings men, in all ages, have made their gods? Asterisk. C. Faber. Pagan idol. B. The second. Ch. Vi. pp. 466. 482. I cannot ascribe such things to my God. This may be will worship, but a belief is not in my power. I am obliged to believe it more probable that men may lie, that priests may be guilty of selfish fraud, than that the wise and beneficent Creator can direct such irrational, fanatical, cruel proceedings, to use Mr. Faber's words, that in later times the practice of sacrifice was very general cannot be denied. But I think a time may be perceived when it did not exist, even among the Western nations. We read that it was not always practiced at Delphi. Tradition states that in the earliest times no bloody sacrifice took place there, and among the Deists, who are the oldest religionists of whom we have any sacred traditions, and to whom the first book of Genesis probably belongs, no bloody sacrifices ever prevailed. With Krishna, Hercules, and the worshippers of the sun in Aries, they probably arose. The second book of Genesis came from the last. No doubt the practice took its rise in the western part of the world, after the sun entered Aries, even among the followers of the Tauric worship, and was carried to a frightful extent. But the prevalence of the practice, as stated by Mr. Faber, is exaggerated. It never was practiced by the followers of Buddha, though they have constituted, perhaps, a majority of the inhabitants of the world. Page 91. How many Zoroasters there were, or whether more than one, it is difficult to determine, but one of them was thought by Hyde, as we have already shown, to have lived in the time of Darius Hystaspes. The following is Dean Prideaux's account of the religion of Zoroaster. The chief reformation which he made in the Magian religion was in the first principle of it. For whereas before they had held the being of two first causes, the first light, or the good God, who was the author of all good, and the other darkness, or the evil God, who was the author of all evil, and that of the mixture of those two, as they were in a continued struggle with each other, all things were made, he introduced a principle superior to them both, one supreme God who created both light and darkness, and out of these two, according to the alone pleasure of his own will, made all things else that are, according to what is said in the 45th chapter of Isaiah, verb 5-7. ? His doctrine, as to this particular, was, that there was one supreme being, independent and self-existing from all eternity, that under him there were two angels, one the angel of light, who is the director of all good, and the other the angel of darkness, who is the director of all evil, and that these two, out of the mixture of light and darkness, made all things that are, and that they are in a perpetual struggle with each other, and that where the angel of light prevails, there the most is good, and where the angel of darkness prevails, there the most is evil, that this struggle shall continue to the end of the world, that there shall be a general resurrection, and a day of judgment, wherein just retribution shall be rendered to all according to their works, after which, the angel of darkness and his disciples shall go into a world of their own, where they shall suffer in everlasting darkness the punishment of their evil deeds, and the angel of light, and his disciples, shall also go into a world of their own, where they shall receive in everlasting light the reward due unto their good deeds, and that after this they shall remain separated forever, and light and darkness be no more mixed together to all eternity, and all this the remainder of that sect which is now in Persia and India, do, without any variation, after so many ages, still hold even to this day. And how consonant this is to the truth is plain enough to be understood without a comment. And whereas he taught that God originally created the good angel only, and that the other followed only by the defect of good, this plainly shews, that he was not unacquainted with the revolt of the fallen angels, and that the entrance of evil into the world that way, but had been thoroughly instructed how that God at first created all his angels good, as he also did man, and that they that are now evil became such holy through their own fault, in falling from the state which God first placed them in. All which plainly shews the author of this doctrine to have been well versed in the sacred writing of the Jewish religion, out of which it manifestly appears to have been taken. Asterisk asterisk Parid. Con. Part 1. Lib. IV. p. 267. 8vo. It is said that Zoroaster pretended to have been taken up into heaven, and to have heard God speak from the midst of a flame of fire, that, therefore, fire is truest Shekinah of the Divine Presence, and that the sun is the most perfect fire ? For which reason he ordered them to direct their worship towards the sun, which they called Mithra. He pretended to have brought fire from heaven along with him, which was never permitted to go out. It was fed with clean wood, and it was deemed a crime to blow upon it, or to rekindle it except from the sun or the sacred fire in some other temple. Thus the Jews had their Shekinah or sacred fire in which God dwelt, and which came down from heaven upon their altar of burnt offerings, and Nadab and Abihu were punished with death for offering incense to God with other fire. The Jews used clean peeled wood for the fire, and, like the Persians, would not permit it to be blown upon with the mouth. Page 93. Zoroaster retired to a cavern where he wrote his book, and which was ornamented on the roof with the constellations and the signs of the zodiac, whence came the custom among his followers of retiring to caves which they called Mithriatic caves, to perform their devotions, in which the mysteries of their religion were performed. Many of these caves of stupendous size and magnificence exist at this day in the neighborhood of Balck, and in different parts of Upper India and Persia. They had several orders of priests like our parochial priests and bishops, and at the head of them an archimagus or archpriest, the same as the Pope or the High Priest of the Jews. The word magus, in the Persian language, only means priest, and they did not forget that most useful Jewish rite, the taking of tithes and oblations. At stated times the priests read part of their sacred writings to the people. The priests were all of the same family or tribe, as among the Jews. Page 94. The religion of Persia became corrupted, and so did the Christian. Zoroaster reformed one, Luther, Mansi, the other. The religion of Abraham was that of the Persians, and whether he were a real or a fictitious personage, a matter of doubt, both the religions must have been derived from the same source. If Abraham really did live, then the evidence both Jewish and Persian shows that he was the founder of both nations. If he were an allegorical personage, the similarity of the religions shows them to have had the same origin. Page 95. The difference between the religion of Moses and that of the surrounding nations consisted merely of this: the latter had become corrupted by the priests, who had set up images in allegorical representation of the heavenly bodies or zodiacal signs, which in long periods of time the people came to consider as representations of real deities. The true and secret meaning of these emblems, the priests, that is the initiated, took the greatest pains to keep from the people. The king and priest were generally united in the same person, and when it was otherwise, the former was generally the mere tool and slave of the latter. But in either case, the sole object of the initiated was, as it yet is, to keep the people in a state of debasement, that they might be more easily ruled. This did the magi in ancient, and thus do the chief priests in modern times wallow in wealth on the labor of the rest of mankind. The priests in almost all ages have found that the more gloomy and horrible a religion is, the better it has suited their purpose. We have this account of the state of the religion, not only from the history of the Jews, but from that of the Gentiles, therefore it can scarcely be disputed. Every ancient religion, without exception, had cabal or secret doctrine, and the same fate attended them all. In order that they might not be revealed or discovered, they were not written, but only handed down by tradition. And in the revolutions of centuries and the violent convulsions of empires they were forgotten. Scraps of the old traditions were then collected, and mixed with new inventions of the priests, having the double object in view, of ruling people and of concealing their own ignorance. Page 96. The 12 signs of the zodiac for the standards of the 12 tribes of Israel, the scorpion or typhon, the devil or emblem of destruction, being changed for the eagle by the tribe of Dan, to whom it was allotted. The Ark, an exact copy of the Ark of Osiris, set afloat in the Nile every year, and supposed to sail to Byblos, in Palestine. The Pillars Joachim and Bose, the festival of the Passover at the vernal equinox, an exact copy of the Egyptian festival at the same time. Almost all the ornaments of the temple, altar, priest, and sea, all these clearly astrological. Book 2. Chapter 5. Character of the Old Testament ? Nature of the allegory in Genesis. Page 96. What in the result is the truth respecting the Old Testament? It is the produce of deep learning and profound wisdom, hidden under the veil of allegory. Or is it mere literal history of transactions of past events, as believed by the Christians and modern Jews? It is probably both, a collection of tracts mixed up with traditions, histories or rumors of events, collected together by the priests of an ignorant, uncivilized race of shepherds, intermixed also with the allegories and fictions in which the ancient philosophers of the Eastern nations veiled their learning from the eyes of the vulgar. The Pentateuch is evidently a collection of different mythological histories of the creation, and of the transactions of Moses, the chief of a tribe of wandering Arabs, who was believed to have brought his tribe from the borders of Egypt and to have conquered Palestine, and there is little doubt that it contains a considerable portion of truth. The treatises in the Pentateuch are put together, or connected with one another, in so very awkward and unskillful a manner, that they would have passed as the work of one person with none but such uncivilized barbarians as the Jews, if they had related to any of the common concerns of life, and where the reasoning faculty of the human mind could be brought into fair action. But in matters connected with religion this has never been done, and never will be done. Reason has nothing to do with the religion of the generality of mankind. Page 97. That many parts of the books of the Jews are allegorical, cannot be for a moment doubted, and, as was said before, no doubt the true knowledge of these allegories constituted their first Kabbalah, and the learning of their priests. But as they are made up of loose, unconnected accounts, very often different accounts of the same history or allegory, it is not possible that any complete and regular system should be made of them. For instance, Genesis contains two histories of the creation, Deuteronomy a history of the promulgation of the law by Moses, different from that given in Exodus, which was evidently written by a different author from that of Genesis. But as far as concerns the generality or industrious class of the Jews and modern Christians, they are taken literally. In this sense they were and are yet received, whether the later Jewish collectors of them into one code understood the allegorical meaning of any of them, remains doubtful. Probably they might be in part, but it is equally, if not more, probable, that they would care very little whether they understood them or not, so long as they assisted them in establishing their temple, their tithes, and their order. Perhaps after these objects were secured, they would amuse themselves in their leisure hours, like our own priests and bishops, in endeavoring by explanations to make order out of disorder, sense out of nonsense. Hence arose their modern Kabbalah, and as they were generally men of the meanest capacities, though perhaps men understanding several languages, the modern Kabbalah is just what might be expected. M. Dupuis, in the first chapter of his third volume, has made many curious observations on the book of Genesis, tending to prove that it was an allegory descriptive of the mythology of the Oriental nations in the neighborhood of Palestine. That is, was allegorical was held by the most learned of the ancient fathers of the Church, such as Clemens Alexandrinus and Origen, as it had been by the most learned of the Jews, such as Philo, Josephus, and C. So that its allegorical nature may perhaps be safely assumed, notwithstanding the nonsense of modern devotees. Page 98. The following extract from the work of Maimonides, called Mor Nevushtim, asterisk exhibits a fair example of the policy of the ancient philosophers, taken to the letter. This work, Genesis, gives the most absurd and extravagant ideas of the divinity. Whoever shall find the true sense of it ought to take care not to divulge it. This is a maxim which all our sages repeat to us, and above all respecting the meaning of the work of the 6 days. If a person should discover the meaning of it, either by himself or with the aid of another, then he ought to be silent, or if he speak of it, he ought to speak of it obscurely, and in an enigmatical manner as I do myself, leaving the rest to be guessed by those who can understand me. Asterisk pars. II. Cat. XXIX. Dupuis. Certus Lescults. Volume. III. P. 9. 40. To admit the accounts of Genesis to be literal, would be to admit facts directly contrary to the moral attributes of God. Fanatical as the ancient fathers were, their fanaticism had not blinded them, as it has blinded the moderns, so far as to admit this. But the story of the Garden of Eden, the trees of knowledge and of life, the talking serpent, and the sin of Adam and Eve were allegorical. Redemption from the atonement from the consequences of his allegorical fault could not but be equally allegorical. This, it is evident, instantly overthrows the whole of the present orthodox or fashionable scheme of the atonement? A doctrine not known in the early ages of the religion, but pick up in the same quarter when several doctrines of modern Christianity will be found to have been derived. In reasoning from cause and effect, this seems to be a necessary consequence. From this difficulty arose a great mass of contradictions and absurdities. It is impossible to deny that it has always been a part of modern corrupt Christian religion that an evil spirit rebelled against God, and that he, having drawn other beings of his own description into the same evil course, was, for his conduct, expelled along with them from heaven, into a place of darkness and intense torment. This nonsense, which is no part of the religion of Jesus the Nazarite, came from the same quarter as the atonement. We shall find them both in India. It is quite impossible that the doctrine of the fallen angels can be taken from the Pentateuch, for not a word of a kind is to met with there, but it is the identical doctrine of the Brahmins and late Magi. The devil is the Mahasur of the Brahmins, and the Ahriman of the Magi. The fallen angels are the Andhra and Dudas of the Brahmins, and the Dausak and Dus of the Magi. The vulgar Jews and Christians, finding the story of the serpent, did not know how to account for it, and in consequence went to the Persians for an explanation. They could not have gone to a better place, for the second book of Genesis, with its serpent biting the foot of the woman's seed, is nothing but a part of a Hindu-Persian history, of which the story of the fallen angels, and sea, is a continuation. Volume 1, Book 3, Chapter 1. Orphic and Mithraic Trinity similar to that of the Christians? Sir William Jones on the religion of the Persians? Persian Oromazds, Mithra, Aramanius? Opinions of Herodotus, Porphyry, Strabo, Julian, on the above? Tide and Bosoba respecting times of Pythagoras and Zoroaster? Followers of Zoroaster, not yet extinct, worship fire? The Vedas describe the Persian religion to have come from Upper India? Maurice on the Hindu Trinity, page 100. In contemplating the different, and often contradictory, circumstances of the religion of the ancient Persians, it is impossible not to observe the striking similarity both of its doctrine, and discipline or practices, to those of their eastern neighbors of India, on one side, and their western neighbors, the Christians of Europe, on the other. That religion appears to have been a connecting link in the chain, and probably in this point of view it will be regarded by every unprejudiced person, when all the circumstances relating to it are taken into consideration. Like almost all the ancient systems of theology, its origin is lost in the most remote antiquity. Its foundation is generally attributed to a sage of the name of Zoroaster, but in order to reconcile the accounts given of him with anything like consistency, or with one another, several persons of this name must be supposed to have lived. Page 101. Treating of the religion of Persia, Sir William Jones says, the primeval religion of Iran, if we may rely on the authorities adduced by Mosani Fani, was that which Newton calls the oldest, and it may justly be called the noblest, of all religions. A firm belief that one supreme God made the world by his power, and continually governed it by his providence. A pious fear, love, and adoration of him, and due reverence for parents and aged persons, a fraternal affection for the whole human species, and a compassionate tenderness even for the brute creation. Sir E. Jones on the Persians, Dis. Vi. p. 197. However bigoted my Christian reader may be, he will hardly deny that there is here the picture of a beautiful religion. The first dogma of the religion of Zoroaster clearly was the existence of one supreme, omnipotent God. In this it not only coincides with the Hindu and the Christians, but with all other religions. In this, therefore, there is not anything particular, but on further inquiry it appears that this great first cause, called Ormazd or Oromazds, was a being like the gods of the Hindus and of the Christians, consisting of three persons, the triplicate deity of the Hindus of three persons and one God, Brahma the creator, Vishnu or Krishna, of whom I shall soon treat, the savior or preserver, and Siva the destroyer. And yet this was all one God, in his different capacities. In the same manner the supreme God of the Persians consisted of three persons, Oromazd the creator, Mithra the savior, mediator, or preserver, and Ahriman the destroyer. The Christians had also their gods, consisting of three persons and one God, the Father, Son and Holy Ghost. Celis informs us, Oromazd and Mithras were frequently used by the Magi for the Tachyon, or whole deity in general, and Plethro adds a third, called Aramanius, which is confirmed by Plutarch, who says that Zoroaster made a threefold distribution of things, and that he assigned the first and highest rank of them to Ahrimazd, who, in the oracles, is called the father, the lowest is Ahrimazd, and the middle to Mithras, who, in the same oracles, is called the second mind, whereupon he observes how great an agreement there was betwixt the Zoroastrian and the Platonic Trinity, they differing in a manner only in words. **Cutworth, Book I, ch. IV, p. 289. And indeed, from that which Plutarch affirms, that the Persians, from their god Mithras, called any mediator, or middle betwixt two, Mithras, it may be more reasonably concluded, that Mithras, according to the Persian theology, was properly the middle hypostasis, of that triplasian, or triplicated deity of theirs, than he should be a middle, self-existent god, or mediator, betwixt two adversary gods, unmade, one good, and the other evil, as Plutarch would suppose. **If it were now needful, we might make it still further evident that Zoroaster, notwithstanding the multitude of gods worshipped by him, was an assertor of one supreme, from his own description of God, extant in Eusebius, God is the first incorruptible, eternal, indivisible, most unlike to everything, the head or leader of all good, unbribable, the best of the good, the wisest of the wise. He is also the father of law and justice, self-taught, perfect, and the only inventor of the natural holy. Eusebius tells us that the Zoroastrian description of God was contained verbatim in a book, entitled A Holy Collection of the Persian Monuments, as also, that Ustanes, himself a famous magician and admirer of Zoroaster, had recorded the very same of him in his Octotuton. **Ib. p. 290. Ib. p. 293. Page 102. Porphyry, in his treatise, De Antronymphorum, says, "Wherefore, from the authority of Eubulus, we may well conclude also, that notwithstanding the sun was generally worshipped by the Persians as a god, yet Zoroaster and the ancient Magi, who were best initiated in Mithraic mysteries, asserted another deity, superior to the sun, for the true Mithras, such as was the maker and father of all things, or of the whole world, whereof the sun is a part. However, they also looked upon the sun as the most lively image of the deity in which it was worshipped by them, as they likewise worshipped the same deity symbolically in fire, as Maximus Tyrius informeth us, agreeable to which is that in the magic oracles, all things are the offsprings of one fire, that is, of one supreme deity, and Julian, the emperor, was such a devout sun worshipper as this, who acknowledged, besides the sun, another incorporeal deity, transcendent to it. The first kind of things, according to Zoroaster, is eternal, the supreme God. In the first place, saith Eusebius, they conceive that God the Father and King ought to be ranked. This the Delphian Oracle, cited by Porphyrius, confirms Chaldees and Jews wise only, worshipping purely a self-begotten God and King. This is that principle of which the author of the Chaldaic summary saith, they conceive there is one principle of all things, and declare that is one and good, God, as Pythagoras learnt of the Magi, who termed him Ahrimazd, in his body resembles light, in his soul truth. Page 103. Sir W. Jones informs us that the letters Mir in the Persian language denote the sun, and he also informs us that the letters Mahira denote the sun in the Hindu language. Now it is pretty clear that these two words are precisely the same, and are in fact nothing but the word Mithra, the sun. No one can doubt that the doctrines of Pythagoras and those of Zoroaster, as maintained when the former was at Babylon after its conquest by Cyrus, were, as it has been already remarked, the same or nearly so. Nor can anyone doubt that Pythagoras was either the fellow laborer and assistant of Zoroaster, or a pupil of his school. Page 103. Manes lived long after both of them, and if it should be contended that he differed from them in any very abstruse speculative point, this will not be admitted as a proof that he did not draw his doctrine from their fountain, when it is known that it came from the east of the Euphrates, and when it is evidently the same in almost every other particular. The Persian Magi have always denied that they worship fire in any other sense than as an emblem of the Supreme Being, but it is extremely difficult to ascertain the exact truth, and the difficulty is increased by the circumstances that most ancient philosophers, And, in fact, almost all the early Christian fathers held the opinion that God consisted of a subtile, ethereal, igneous fluid, which pervades all nature? That God was fire. All the Oriental and Grecian writers agree in ascribing to the Persians the worship of one supreme God. They only differ as to the time when this first began to take place. Mr. Maurice says, but it is now necessary that we should once more direct our attention towards Persia. The profound reverence, before noticed, to have been equally entertained by the Magi of Persia and the Brahmins of India, for the solar orb and for fire, forms a most striking and prominent feature of resemblance between the religion of Zoroaster and that of Brahma. Page 105. The Vedas are four very voluminous books, which contain the code of laws of Brahma. Mr. Dow supposes them to have been written 4,887 years before the year 1769 3118 B.C. Close square bracket. Sir W. Jones informs us that the principal worship inculcated in them is that of the solar fire, and, in the Discourse on the Literature of the Hindus, he acquaints us that the author of the Devastan describes a race of old Persian sages, who appear, from the whole of this account, to have been Hindus. That the Book of Menu, said to be written in a celestial dialect, and alluded to by the author, means the Vedas, written in the Devanagari character, and that as Zarathustra was only a reformer, in India may be discovered the true source of the Persian religion. Asterisk. This is rendered extremely probable by the wonderful similarity of the caves, as well as the doctrines, of the two countries. The principal temple of the Magi in the time of Darius Hystaspes was at Balkh, the capital of Bactria, the most eastern province of Persia, situated on the northwest frontiers of India and very near to where the religion of Brahma is yet in its greatest purity, and where the most ancient and famous temples and caverns of the Hindus were situated. Asterisk Ajit. Res. Volume, I.P. 349. Mr. Maurice says, of exquisite workmanship, and of stupendous antiquity? Antiquity to which neither the page of history nor human traditions can ascend? That magnificent piece of sculpture so often alluded to in the cavern of Elephanta decidedly establishes the solemn fact, that, from the remotest eras, the Indian nations have adored a triune deity. There the traveler with awe and astonishment beholds, carved out of the solid rock, in the most conspicuous part of the most ancient and venerable temple of the world, a bust, expanding in breadth near 20 feet, and no less than 18 feet in altitude, by which amazing proportion, as well as its gorgeous decorations, it is known to be the image of the grand presiding deity of that hallowed retreat. He beholds, I say, a bust composed of three heads united to one body, adorned with the oldest symbols of the Indian theology, and thus expressly fabricated, according to the unanimous confession of the sacred sacerdotal tribe of India, to indicate the creator, the preserver, and the regenerator of mankind. Asterisk asterisk Maurice Indiana, Ant, Volume, IV, p. 736. To destroy, according to the Vedantists of India and Sufis of Persia, that is, the Sufa or wise men of Persia, is only to regenerate or reproduce in another form. And in this doctrine they are supported by many philosophers of our European schools. We may safely affirm that we have no experience of the actual destruction, the annihilation of any substance whatever. On this account it is that Mahadeva of India, the destroyer, is always said to preside over generation, as represented riding upon a bull, the emblem of the sun, when the vernal equinox took place in that sign, and when he triumphed in his youthful strength over the powers of hell and darkness, and near him generally stands the gigantic lingam orphalus, the emblem of the creative power. From this Indian deity came, through the medium of Egypt and Persia, the Grecian mythos of Jupiter Genitor, with the bull of Europa, and his extraordinary title of Lapis a title probably given to him on account of the stone pillar with which his statue is mostly accompanied, and the object of which is generally rendered unquestionable by the peculiar form of its summit or upper part. In India and Europe this god is represented as holding his court on the top of lofty mountains. In India they are called Mountains of the Moon or Chandrasaitra. In the western countries Olympuses. He is called Trilochan and has three eyes. Pausanias tells us that Zeus was called Triophimos, and that, previous to the taking of Troy, he was represented with three eyes. As Mr. Forbes asterisk says, The identity of the two gods falls a little short of being demonstrated. Asterisk Mem. Orion. Volume. III. Ch. XXXV. P. 444 in the Museum of the Asiatic Society is an Indian painting of a Krishna seated on a lotus with three eyes ? Emblems of the Trinity. Book 3. Chapter 2 The word OM ? Imphalos ? Olympus. Ammon. Delphi. Digression concerning the word ON ? Subject of Ammon renewed ? Ham the son of Noah, and Ammon the son of Ares ? Nibar on the Ombrisi of Italy. Several remarkable synonyms ? ON the spirit aura, the dove ? Priestley's opinion ? Subject of the Persian and Hindu Trinity resumed page 106 Mr. Hastings, one the most early and liberal patrons of Sanskrit literature in India, in a letter to Nathaniel Smith, Esquire, has remarked how accurately many of the leading principles of the pure, unadulterated doctrines of Brahma correspond with those of the Christian system. In the Gita, one of the most ancient of the Hindu books, indeed, some passages, surprisingly consonant, occur concerning the sublime nature and attributes of God, as well as concerning the properties and function of the soul. Thus, where the deity, in the form of Krishna, addresses Arjuna, I am the creator of all things, and all things proceed from me, I am the beginning, the middle, and the end of all things, I am time, I am all-grasping death, and I am the resurrection, I am the mystic figure OM, I am generation and dissolution. Arjuna in pious ecstasy exclaims, reverence, reverence, be unto thee, 1,000 times repeated, again and again reverence, O thou who art all in all, infinite in thy power and glory. Thou art the Father of all things animate and inanimate, there is none like unto thee. *. Maurice Indiana, Ant, page 107. The divinity is frequently characterized in that book, as in other Sanskrit compositions, by the word OM, that mystic emblem of the deity in India. The ancient Brahmins, as well as the Buddhists, of India, regarded this word with the same kind of veneration as the Jews did the word U, which they never pronounced except on certain very solemn occasions. This is what is meant by the fourth commandment, which we render, Thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God, but which ought to be U thy God, in vain. As a pious Jew will not utter the word U, so a pious Hindu will not utter the word OM. It is the duty of the Jews and Hindus to meditate on the respective words in silence, and with the most profound veneration. The word OM is always prefixed in pronouncing the words which represent the seven superior worlds, as if to shew that these seven worlds are manifestations of the power signified by that word. In an old Purana we find the following passage, All the rites ordained in the Vedas, the sacrifices to the fire, and all other solemn purifications, shall pass away. But that which shall never pass away is the word OM ? For it is the symbol of the Lord of all things. M. Du Bois adds, that he thinks it can only mean the true God. P. 155. ? The sacred monosyllable is generally spelled OM, but, being triliteral, it seems better expressed by OM, or AM or AWM, it being formed of the three Sanskrit letters that are best so represented. The first letter stands for the Creator, the second for the Preserver, and the third for the Destroyer. *. Moore's Pantheon, pp. 414-414. Sir W. Jones informs us that the names Brahma, Vishnu, and Siva, coalesce and form the mystical word OM, which he says signifies neither more nor less than the solar fire. Here I apprehend we have the identical word used by the ancient Egyptians and their neighbors for the sun, Ammon. Jones, Asiat, Res, Hesychius, also Pseudus in those, interprets the word OM to be KSELHDWN, the sacred voice, the holy sound ? And hence arose the omphalos, or place of Imphi. But its real meaning is still further unraveled by explaining it as OMFH, the enunciation of the mysterious OM of Hindu theology, the sacred literal OM, but often written as it is pronounced, OM. Page 108. I find the oracle or divina vox at Delphi called Imphalos, and the word Delphi or D-E-L-F-M-J means the female generative power, and in front of the temple of Delphi, in fact constituting a part of the religious edifice, was a large phallus or linga, anointed every day with oil. This, taken altogether, shows very clearly that Amphale means the oracle of the generative, androgynous, power of Om, the Om of India, as might well be expected, as found in Persia, under the name Om, and particularly in the mountains of Persia, amongst the Arabi, before they are said to have migrated, under Jemshid, to the south. As usual, we get the northeast, for the origin of things. Cruiser, notes, p. 686. Bacchus was called Omestus, explained the devourer. This is in fact the Omesta, of Persia. Istachar, or Estachar, is the place or temple of Istil or Esta, who was the Hesta Amgia of the Greeks, and Vesta of the Romans. This Persian Istil or Esta, is the Latin Istid and they, he or she is. It is also Sanskrit, and means the same as the Jah of the Hebrews. Bacchus, Achios and Tenedos, was also called Omadius. This is correctly the God, or the Holy Om. Page 109. Various derivations are given on the word On, but I think it only stood for the sun as emblem of the procreative power of nature. It was from Menupis, a priest of On, that Pythagoras is said to have learnt the system of the heavenly bodies moving round the sun in unceasing revolutions. The priests of this temple esteemed the first in Egypt. Page 110 and On or 0?3 When, where John baptized, was called by a figure of speech only Enum, or the fountain of the sun. The literal meaning was, the fountain of the generative power. Page 111 The name of the son of Noah was, H.M., called Ham. The name of the solar orb was Percent, me the feminine of, H.M. It appears to me that from misapprehension, the Ham of Noah has been confounded with the Ham, or H.M. or Om of Egypt? The Jupiter Amun or Amun, the god with the ram's head, adored of the Ejon Omain. The word, H.M., the patriarch, and the word Percent, me, the sun, being the same, were the cause of the mistake. I know no reason for believing that the son of Noah was deified a mere fancy of modern priests, but I have many reasons for believing that Amun was the sun as the generating power, first in Taurus, then in Aries, Belus, Kronos, Apis, were solar symbols, and Nonis ranks Amun with these. Amun was clearly understood by the mythologists to represent the sun in Aries. Sir W. Drummond has given many other satisfactory reasons for Amun being the sun. Then how absurd is it to go farther? All difficulties are easily explained by attending to the circumstance of the fundamental doctrine, that, in fact, all the gods resolve themselves into the sun, either as god or as emblem of the triune androgynous being. Drum, Aridig, B. IV. P. 230. Page 112. Thus we have several clear and distinct meanings of Omphalage. It was Mitis, Begninas. It was the male generative power, as Phalage, as Amphale. It was the female generative power, the wife of Hercules, and the navel of the earth or Nabai. It was also the prophetic voice of the benignant Om. We shall see by and by how it came to have all these different meanings. Before we conclude this work, we shall find a similar variety arising from other names connected with this subject, and in particular it should be recollected that we have found the Indian Krishna or Krishna calling himself Om. The third person was the destroyer, or, in his good capacity, the regenerator. The dove was the emblem of the regenerator. When a person was baptized, he was regenerated or born again. A dove descended on the head of Jesus at his baptism. Devotees professed to be born again by the Holy Ghost Sanct Spiritus. We read of an evil spirit and of a Holy Spirit. One is the third person in his destroying capacity, the other in his regenerative capacity. We read in the Acts of the Apostles, ch. XVI, 16, of a spirit of Python or a Pythonic spirit, an evil spirit. Python, or the spirit of Python, was the destroyer. But at Delphi he was also Apollo, who was said to be the sun in heaven, Bacchus on earth, and Apollo in hell. M. Du Bois has observed, p. 293, that the prana or principle of life, of the Hindus, is the breath of life by which the Creator animated the clay, and man became a living soul. General, the second, 7. The Holy Spirit or ghost was sometimes masculine, sometimes feminine, as the third person of the Trinity. It was well known to the ancient Gentiles as to the moderns, as it will hereafter be shown. page 113 I believe by almost all the ancients, both Jews and Gentiles, the Supreme Being was thought to be material, and to consist of a very refined igneous fluid, more like the galvanic or electric fire than anything with which I am acquainted. This was also the opinion of most of the ancient Christian fathers. This was called the anima as feminine, or spiritus as masculine and was the and plus re of the second verse of Genesis, which Parkhurst calls breath or air in motion, Isaiah XI, 4, an incorporeal substance, and the Holy Spirit. From this comes the expression to inspire, or holy inspiration. The word ghost means spiritus or anima. This was often confounded with the igneous fluid of which God was supposed to consist, whence came the baptism by fire and the Holy Ghost, Matt, the 3rd, 11. These were absurd refinements of religious metaphysicians, which necessarily arose from their attempts to define that of which they had not the means of forming an idea. I should be as absurd, if I were to attempt to reconcile their inconsistencies. In the above examples of the different names for the Holy Ghost, a singular mixture of genders is observable. We see the active principle, fire, the creator and the preserver, and also the destroyer, identified with the Holy Ghost of the Christians, in the united form of the dove and of fire settling on the apostles. Here we have most clearly the Holy Ghost identified with the destroyer, fire, the wife of Jove, the creator, very naturally bears the name of the female procreative power, Juno. It is unnecessary to point out the close relation of the passion of love to the procreative power. There can scarcely be a doubt that the dove was called after the Yoni, or the Yoni after the dove, probably from its salacious qualities. And as creation was destruction, and the creative the destructive power, it came to be the emblem of the destructive as well as the creative power. Page 115. Sonrat also gives a passage from a Sanskrit poem, asterisk in which it is stated that it is God alone who created the universe by his productive power, who maintains it by his all-preserving power, and who will destroy it by his destructive power, and that it is this God who is represented under the name of three gods, who are called Trimurti. Mr. Foster says, one circumstance which forcibly struck my attention was the Hindu belief of a trinity. The persons are Shaman Narain, the Mahalakshmi, a beautiful woman, and a serpent. These persons are by the Hindus supposed to be holy and divisible. The one is three, and the three are one. Mr. Maurice then states that the Shriman Narain, as Mr. Foster writes it, is Narayan, the supreme god, the beautiful woman eyed the Emma of the Hebrews, and that the union of the sexes is perfectly consistent with the ancient doctrine maintained in the Gita, and propagated by Orpheus, that the deity is both male and female. Asterisk Voyages, Volume, I, p. 259, Ibid, p. 749, Sketches of Hindu Mythology, p. 12, Maurice Indiana, Ant, Volume, IV, p. 750. Mr. Maurice, in his Indian Antiquities, says, this notion of three persons in the deity was diffused amongst all the nations of the earth, established at once in regions so distant as Japan and Peru, immemorially acknowledged throughout the whole extent of Egypt and India, and flourishing with equal vigor amidst the snowy mountains of Tibet, and the vast deserts of Siberia. Book 3. Chapter 2. Israel Worsley's account of ancient Trinity's Opinion of Drive, Pritchard and others on the Trinity's Opinion of Maurice and others on the Trinity's The Christian Trinity Its Origin Macrobius on the Trinity Philo's Trinity of the Jews Faber's account of the universal belief of the Trinity Observations on the doctrine that destruction is only regeneration. Page 115. Mr. Worsley says, this doctrine was of very great antiquity, and generally received by all the Gothic and Celtic nations. These philosophers taught that the supreme god, Tut or Wotan, was the active principle, the soul of the world, which, uniting itself to matter, had thereby put it into a condition to produce intelligences or inferior gods and men. This the poets express by saying that Odin espoused Freya, or the lady, by way of eminence. Yet they allotted a great difference between these two principles. The supreme was eternal, whereas matter was his work, and of course had a beginning. All this was expressed by the phrase, earth is the daughter and wife of the universal father. From this mystical union was born the god Thor, The Lord Thor. He was the firstborn of the Supreme, the greatest of the intelligences that were born of the union of the two principles. The characters given him correspond much with those which the Romans gave to their Jupiter. He, too, was the Thunderer, and to him was devoted the fifth day, Thursdag, in German and Dutch, Donderdag, Thunder Day. The common oaths of these people mark the same origin. They swear by Donder and Blexen, thunder and lightning. Friday took its name from Freya, Freya's Dag, as Wednesday did from Woden, Woden's Dag. This was the name which the old Saxons gave to the son of the Supreme, thence Tuesday. Thor, being the firstborn, was called the eldest of the sons. He is made a middle divinity, a mediator between God and man. Such, too, was the Persians' god, for Thor was venerated also as the intelligence that animated the sun and fire. The Persians declared that the most illustrious of all the intelligences was that which they worshipped under the symbol of fire. They called him Mithras, or the mediator god. The Scythians called him Gatosaurus, the good star. All the Celtic nations were accustomed to worship the sun, either as distinguished from Thor, or as his symbol. It was their custom to celebrate a feast at the winter solstice, when that great luminary began to return again to this part of the heavens. They called it Yule, from Hioul, Helios, the sun, which to this day signifies the sun in the language of Britain and Cornwall, whence the French word Noël. How great a resemblance may be seen between the expressions which have been stated above, relative to these ancient trinities, and those of some Christian worshippers, who imagine that the Father begat the Son according to some in time, according to others from eternity and that from these two sprang or proceeded the Holy Ghost. Israel Worsley's Inquiry. P. 42. According to Israel Worsley, it was Justin Martyr, a Christian convert from the Platonic school, who, about the middle of the 2nd century, first promulgated the opinion that the Son of God was the second principle in the Deity, and the creator of all material things. He is the earliest writer to whom this opinion can be traced. He ascribes his knowledge of it, not to the scriptures, but to the special favor of God. But Justin is the very earliest admitted genuine Christian writer whom we have, not supposed to be inspired, and it seems that he did not attribute the knowledge of his doctrine to the gospel histories. The reason of this will be explained hereafter. Ibid. P. 54. Mr. Worsley then proceeds to state that modern theologians have defined the three hypostases in the Godhead with great precision, though in very different words. But the fathers of the Trinitarian Church were neither so positive nor so free from doubt and uncertainty, nor were they agreed in their opinions upon it. The very councils were agitated. Nor is that which is now declared essential to salvation, the ancient Trinity. They who thought the Word an attribute of the Father, which assumed a personality at the beginning of the creation, called this the generation of the Son, regarding him still as inferior to the Father, whom they called the God by way of eminence, while, after the example of the old heathens, they called the Son God. This notion of descent implied inferiority, and on that ground was objected to, and the Nicene Council, in 325, issued a corrected and improved symbol, and Christ instead of only Son, was styled God of God, and very God of very God. But even here the equality of the Son was not established. The Father by whom he was begotten, being regarded as the great fountain of life, the investment of wisdom with a personality still implied a time when he was begotten, and consequently a time when he was not. From this dilemma an escape was in process of time provided by the hypothesis of an eternal generation, a notion which is self-contradictory. The Nicene Fathers, however, did not venture on the term Trinity, for they had no intention of raising their pre-existent Christ to an equality with the Father, and as to the Holy Spirit, this was considered as of subordinate rank, and the clause respecting its procession and being worshipped together with the Father and the Son, were not added till the year 381, at the Council of Constantinople. I give no opinion on the statement of Mr. Worsley, as it is not my intention to enter into a controversy as to what the Trinity is, but only give an historical account of it. Ibid. P. 63. Page 117 Drive. Pritchard, in his analysis of Egyptian mythology, p. 271, describes the Egyptians to have a trinity consisting of the generative, the destructive, and the preserving power, Isis answers to Siva, Biswara, or Lord, is the epithet of Siva, or Siva, Osiris, or Osiris, as Hellanicus wrote the Egyptian name, was the god at whose birth a voice was heard to declare, that the Lord of all nature sprang forth to light, drive. Pritchard again says, p. 262, the oldest doctrine of the Eastern schools is the system of emanations and metempsychosis. These two were also essentially the doctrine of the Magi, and of the Jews, more particularly of the sect of the Pharisees, or, as they ought to be called, of the Parsees. *. The Pharisees were merely Parsees, the Jews pronounced P like PH or F, persons who intermingled Median notions, acquired during the captivity, with the law of Moses, hence a particular propriety in child of fire, Mat. XXII, 15, sup. 2 Paleoromaica, pp. 63, 100. The god Oromazda was undoubtedly the supreme god of the Persians, but yet the religion was generally known by the name of the religion of Mithra, the mediator or savior. In the same way in India the worship of the first person of their trinity is lost and absorbed in that of the second, few or no temples being found dedicated to Brahman. So among the Christians, the worship of the Father is lost to that of the Son, the mediator and savior. Page 118 The doctrine of the Trinity is first to be met with to the northeast of the Indus, and it may be traced westwards to the Greeks and Latin nations, but the two latter seemed almost to have lost sight of it as a national or vulgar doctrine. Indeed, among the multitude in them, nothing half so rational is to be found. It seems to have been confined to the philosophers, such as Plato? But whether as a secret doctrine or mystery may admit of doubt. Whether the doctrine of the Trinity formed a part of the Christian religion has been disputed almost from its earliest period, by a great variety of sects, with a degree of bitterness and animosity hardly to be equaled in the history of the world. In Chapter 2, Mr. Maurice has brought together a vast variety of facts to prove that the doctrine of the Trinity was generally held by the Gentiles, but they all at last shew its origin to have been the Egyptians, Mithraic or Hindu school. From this source the Trinity sprang, a doctrine which it is seen may be traced to very remote periods of time, indeed long prior to the time fixed for the existence of the Jews, or probably of Noah, and it passed to them through the medium of the Persians and Egyptians, as it did also to the Greeks, and from them all it passed to the Christians in a later day. However, in all the great essential parts it is the same. There are the Father, the Creator ? The Son, the Preserver or Savior ? And the evil principle or the devil ? I and his bad character the Destroyer, and his good one, the Regenerator. The same three persons as in the Christian Trinity ? Except that the ignorant monks of the Dark Ages, not understanding their fine doctrine of the eternity of matter, and that destruction was only reproduction, divided the third person into two ? The Destroyer and Regenerator, and thereby, in fact, formed four gods ? The Father, the Son, the Holy Ghost, and the Devil. Page 120 And thus, by this learned priest, asterisk not by me, the whole correct Christian Trinity, with its various hypostases, is shown to have existed in the religion of Mithra and the Magi, ages before Christ was born. *Maurice, Indiana, Ant, Volume, IV, p. 267. Plutarch says, Zoroaster is said to have made a threefold distribution of things, to have assigned the first and highest rank to Oromazdes, who, in the oracles, is called the father, the lowest to Ahrimans, and the middle to Mithras, who, in the same oracle, is called Tundufan and Qn, the second mind, as Mr. Maurice says, *Plutarch, born in the first century, cannot have copied this from a Christian forgery. Besides, he expressly says that it is taken from the oracles ? Herein going very far to confirm the genuineness of the oracles. Indeed, he actually does confirm it, in those parts where the quotations are found. *Deizide et os ride, p. 370, volume, IV, p. 367, in the Pythagorean and Platonic remains, written long anterior to the Christian era, all the dogmas of Christianity are to be found. Witness the Dhmiqfgoj or Zujbasiluj, the Dufanchkianj, or second god, Dufanch and Qj, or second mind, the Mikvach Mesithj, or Mediatorial Mithra, and Gentaj Kianj, or Generated God, Begotten Not Made, again, the Yusiosmq, or Soul of the World, i.e., the, and plus Ra or Spiritus, of Osrisen Brahma, in Loto Arbor Sedentam Superaquam, brooding on the waters of the deep, the Kianj Logma, or Divine Word, Burgum, which Jesus announced to his mother that he was, immediately on his birth, as recorded in the Gospel of his infancy, **more, Indiana, Sep. Conf. pp. 53 and 139, page 121. Eusebius acknowledges that the doctrines of the Christians, as described in the first chapter of John, are perfectly accordant with those of the Platonists, who assayed to everything in it, until they come to the sentence, et verbum caro factum a. This seems to be only point in which the two systems differed. The philosophers could not bring themselves to believe that the Logos, in the gross and literal sense of the Christians, quitted the bosom of God, to undergo the sorrowful and degrading events attributed to him. This appeared to them to be a degradation of the deity. Eusebius allows, what cannot be denied, that this doctrine existed long anterior to Plato, and that it also made part of the dogmas of Philo and other Hebrew doctors. He might have added that also, had he known it, of the priests of Egypt, and all of the philosophers of India, of the figure in the Hindu's caves, the date cannot be denied to be long anterior to the time of Moses, of the second person, having his foot bitten by the serpent, whose head he is bruising, proves the origin of Genesis. There can be no longer any reasonable doubt that it came from India, and as the Christian Trinity is to be found in its first chapter, it raises, without further evidence, a strong presumption that also came from India. Page 122. Macrobius, asterisk in his commentary on the Dream of Scipio, a work of Cicero's, which he explains by the great principles of the philosophy of the Pythagoreans and the Platonists, has given in the clearest manner, in his account of the Trinity of the Gentiles, a description of the Triad or Trinity of the Orthodox, ? The triple distinction of God the Father, of his Logos, and of the Spiritus, with affiliation similar to that which exists in the theology of the Christians, and an idea of their unity inseparable from that of the Creator. It seems, in reading it, as if we were listening to a Christian doctor, who was teaching us how the Spiritus proceeds, and the Son is engendered from the Father, and how they both remain eternally attached to the paternal unity, notwithstanding their actions on the intellectual and visible world. He says that the three first links of this immense chain are the Father, his Logos, NQJ, mens, and Anima or Spiritus Mundi, or, in the Christian phraseology, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, the principles of all things, and placed above all created beings. After this he goes on to explain, in exact Christian style of language, the manner in which the Spirit proceeds, and in which the Son is begotten engendered by the Father, **macrob, Psalm, Sip, Lib, I, Cat, the second, Hivi, Novaret, **in his account of China, says this sect, of Fo, has another idol they call Sanpao. It consists of three, equal in all respects. This, which has been represented as an image of the Most Blessed Trinity, is exactly the same with that which is on the high altar of the monastery of the Trinitarians at Madrid. If any Chinese whatsoever saw it, he would say the Sanpao of his country was worshipped in these parts. **Book the Second Ch. X, and Book Vi. Ch. Xi. Page 125. The following extract from Mr. Faber's work on the origin of heathen idolatry exhibits a pretty fair proof how very general was the ancient doctrine of the Trinity among the Gentiles. Among the Hindus we have the triad of Brahma Vishnu Shiva, springing from the monad Brahm, and it is acknowledged that these personages appeared upon earth at the commencement of every new world, in the human form of Manu and his three sons. Among the votaries of Buddha we find the self-triplicated Buddha declared to be the same as the Hindu Trimurti. Among the sect of the Jainists, we have the triple Jina, in whom the Trimurti is similarly declared to be incarnate. Among the Chinese, who worship Buddha under the name of Fo, we still find this god mysteriously multiplied into three persons, corresponding with the three sons of Fo Hai, who is evidently Noah. Among of that Tartars of the house of Japhet, who carried off into their northern settlements the same ancient worship. We find evident traces of a similar opinion in the figure of the triple god seated on the lotus, as exhibited on the famous Siberian medal in the imperial collection at Petersburg, and if such a mode of representation required to be elucidated, we should have the exposition furnished us in the doctrine of the Jakuthi Tartars, who, according to Strindberg, are the most numerous people of Siberia, for these idolaters worship a triplicated deity under the three denominations of Archyvan, and Shigotangan, and Tangaria. This Tartar god is the same even in appellation with the Tanga Tanga of the Peruvians, who, like the other tribes of America, seem plainly to have crossed over from the northeastern extremity of Siberia, agreeably to the mystical motions so familiar to the Hindus, that the self-triplicated Great Father yet remained but one in essence. The Peruvians suppose their Tanga Tanga to be one in three, and three in one, and in consequence of the union of hero worship with the astronomical and material systems of idolatry, they venerated the sun and the air, each under three images and three names. The same opinions equally prevailed throughout the nations which lie to the west of Hindostan. Thus the Persians had their Omas, Mithras, and Ahriman, or, as the matter was sometimes represented, their self-triplicating Mithras. The Syrians had their Monibus, Aziz, and Ares. The Egyptians had their Amep, Icton, and Thoth. The Greeks and Romans had their Jupiter, Neptune, and Pluto. Three in number though one in essence, and all springing from Cronus, a fourth, yet older god. The Canaanites had their Baal Spalisha or self-triplicated Baal. The Goths had their Odin, Vile, and V, who are described as the three sons of Numa, the offspring of the mysterious cow. And the Celts had their three bulls, venerated as the living symbols of the triple Horemenu. To the same class we must ascribe the triads of the Orphic and Pythagorean and Platonic schools, each of which must again be identified with the imperial triad of the old Chaldaic or Babylonian philosophy. This last, according to the accounts which is given of it by Damascus, was a triad shining throughout the whole world, over which presides Amindad, **, Book of E, ch. The second, p. 470. Page 126. The school of Plato has been generally looked to for the origin of the Christian Trinity, but as we have seen, it would be more correct to look to the oracles of Zoroaster. There can be no doubt that the heathens adored the Trinity before the Christians, and did not copy it from Christianity. If either copied, the Christians must have copied from their heathen predecessors. But all this has a strong tendency to prove that what Ammonius Saccas said was true, namely, that the religions of Christianity and the Gentiles were the same, when stripped of the meretricious ornaments with which the craft of the priests had loaded them.